Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and here we go. It is Friday, the 6th day of January, 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. It's where we live online, and that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the madcap multimedia real-time extravaganza, the zany, wacky experience that is The Horn chat room. Just click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in, and you will be met by Don from Central PA and Chugga Punch and Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, and being as how he is a third stage guild navigator anticipating the big storm in Northern California, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky has folded space to briefly become Man Cave before he has to unfold space and become Sparky again so that he can moderate the Horn Malloy Skype chat group that will begin here in about, 58 minutes or so. And if you would like to participate in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and never have, well, it's quite easy, really. All you have to do is get on your Skype and send a contact request therein to Sparky Dunk, one word, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, and make some sort of a note about Friday on the front porch or something like that. And then he'll show you the breadcrumb trail, and you will, in about, an hour or so, be a part of something that's really quite unique in progressive broadcasting. Hell, I don't even know if they do this in right-wing broadcasting. Probably not, because they have to stop every 7 minutes and sell some herbal erection remedies and baldness cures and vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses designed on the foam developed by NASA that sits there in the bedroom next to the night table where the Bose Wave radio sits, all of which sits on a floor that came from Lumber Liquidators inside a General Steel building. I think I've got it all there, don't I? Well, we forgot about the gold buying, but you can't have everything. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Friday on the front porch on the 6th day of January, 2017, and hopefully, we will have a rousing conversation this evening. I think we've got ample fodder for same. Oh, yes, we do. Got a couple of different topics to work with and some sidelights and lowlights and things like that. I should note here before we get too far into the program, of course, that this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. And that means that we have to raise money to keep paying the damn bills. And lots of damn bills there are. In particular, we try to raise $200 every evening. Sometimes it works out better than others. Sometimes not at all. But we've got that and a little bit more to raise this evening, about $300. But thanks very kindly to those who helped knock that down this evening. Thanks to Kath in Arizona, and thanks to Chris in Germany. I'll get the rest of the thanks here in a second, because I really do like to thank our subscribers, because they fill in the gaps when things don't go according to plan during the regular evening's broadcast or subsequent thereto. Thanks very kindly to Brock. Thank you very much indeed. And to Alex in New York. Thanks to Kim in New Jersey. Thanks to Sal. Thank you very kindly, Sal. And thanks to Laurel there in Minnesota. And thanks to Kitty. Thanks, Kitty, in Boston. Thank you very kindly, because y'all made the difference in keeping the hole from getting a lot deeper than it otherwise would have been. No. question from VT Blom in the chat room. You have a new mic? Nope, same old mic that we've been using for the last 12 years or so. And he says, your voice is different than normal. Well, let's remember, normal is only a setting on a dryer. And no, this there've been audio issues for the last few nights, and I haven't yet figured out where it was that the cats walked across the mix desk. Last time we had a problem, that was what it was. But it does, it seems to be wanting in the way of some high-end. It sounds kind of muddy to me. I don't know. But there's no way of telling. So we'll just kind of have to deal with it, I suppose. At any rate, if you would like to help us keep the program going, just go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on the Contribute tab. You'll find a little form to fill out there that's generated by PayPal, not by us. And you can leave the ones alone about what you do and where you do it and all of that. We don't care. And just get to the next screen. That's where you make your PayPal choices or your credit card choices or whatever. If you would like to become a subscriber, we welcome you to. We need subscribers. We need lots of subscribers. We need 400 subscribers at $10 a piece when you get right down to it, but we'd be thrilled to get to 100. So if you'd like to become a subscriber, just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and then get to the next screen. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, that's cool too. Let me know so I can tell Boss Man Wayne to keep an eye out. That's the address there for checks and money orders is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And like I said, let me know in advance so I can tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout. And hey, he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the big red truck, and instead he can take one of those nice cast iron tees that you use to turn the water back on with, in case he runs into the Obergruppenkriegel of the Klan, who gets his mail there in that same UPS facility. Also, let me extend my apologies for bailing out early last night, but it did prove to be quite necessary. All told, it took about 2 hours. Half an hour of that was actually involved in going in and buying some propane and things like that. But all told, it took an hour and a half to do a 30-mile round trip, the majority of which is actually four-lane highway here. Had to go and pick up Margie from work. And, well, it was a little object lesson, I suppose, in what it looks like when your state government begins to go into collapse. Now, we don't get the snow here that they get in Vermont or Maine or upstate New York or Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa even. We don't get that. But we get enough to make the roads hazardous. although this being a climate change winter, we have dodged a big part. So, well, we've dodged a good bit of miserable weather so far. Once upon a time, cold weather and snow started around here in November and didn't let up till April. We barely saw the first flake before yesterday. But flakes we did see yesterday. It wasn't a... Yeah, that's true. That's true. Ron in the far frozen north said, don't forget Canada. How could I ever forget Canada? We don't get anything resembling what Canada gets. But we get enough. Enough to make the roads dangerous. And people in rural areas still have to go and do things like get to and from work. But in a state with an economy that is rapidly heading into freefall, it seems that snow removal has become more of a chore than we can accomplish. This was not a big snow. This was not much of a snow at all. I mean, we're talking about maybe an inch or two on the ground. But the State Department of Highways, well, when we it started snowing about 11 o'clock noon yesterday. So it's not like it came as a great surprise, or that we'd had an early winter that had used up all of our salt stocks. They had ample warning. And still, by the time I left here to go and pick up Marky, like I said, it took about 45 minutes to get over to Hellmart in the Hellmart Plaza, which is every bit of 15 miles away. And the snow was covering the roads. And, of course, I've got about 6-7 miles of little two-lane U.S. highway to traverse. And I thought, it'll be okay when we get out to the four-lane, which is a major U.S. four-lane highway. Nope. Couldn't tell what was lane, what was shoulder. And that's because our state government here is going broke. Because we put all of our eggs in the coal basket. And then, last year, our legislature, in its oh-so-finite wisdom, decided to cut chunks out of the basket by cutting taxes on the coal industry. The poor, poor, bedraggled coal industry. Those poor miners. And never mind that, it's more like, those poor executives. And so, consequently, snow removal, not such a priority, I guess, anymore. So it did turn out to be a giant gut-churning pain going over and coming back. The roads are almost clear enough now. They're a little sketchy yet. But Agnes, I didn't want her doing it last night, so Agnes is doing the work pickup this evening. In fact, she's already gone. I've made her swear to text me when she gets there and text me when she leaves and that sort of thing. And thanks. Steve in New York says, subject line, bailing out, stop apologizing, you give a shitload to the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thank you, Steve, that's very kind of you. So anyway, that's why we missed an hour of program last night. But we'll try to make up for it tonight. because I think we're going to have some engaging conversation. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Don from Central PA in the chat room says, Bob, the West Virginia legislature probably thinks that if the climate change, global warming is real, the snow will melt quickly, just like God intended. I wish that didn't sound so close to the way that those people probably cogitate. But it is. So where do you want to go with the conversation this evening? We really do have multiple possibilities. You know, the government released its intel report today on Russian spying. I hesitate to use the word hacking, because to the best of our knowledge thus far, no video game voting machines were hacked by the Russians. They just fuck up all by themselves. But it seems abundantly clear, at least to the federal government. I'm sure it won't be clear to Glenn Greenwald. I'm sure he's furiously typing away right now, even as we speak, at some sort of article, the opinion piece that will castigate the entire federal government for not reporting directly to Glenn Greenwald. And then that article will, probably devolve into a seventh grade slap fight, because everything that Glenn Greenwald writes eventually devolves into a seventh grade slap fight. Because Glenn Greenwald can't stand not being the story. Oh, well. But for, I don't know, what the diehard defenders of Pooty Poot will have to say. I'm sure it was patently impossible, because Pooty Poot is just a snuggly, lovable Russian bear that who cuddles and never orders anybody to be poisoned with polonium-210 or anything. It's just a scurrilous libel of a good, loving Christian man. As Ron in the far frozen north points out, ah, yes, the intel report, the one that Fox criticizes because it doesn't list the actual sources, so we can't trust a politicized intelligence community. Right, that Fox. But Ron did send me a message earlier. He said, based upon the report released today, I will formally acknowledge that I was wrong with regard to Putin et al. Deliberately interfering in the election process. Frankly, I'm stunned. To my mind, that is an act of war, and I would expect a stronger response than simply kicking out 35 diplomats and closing down a couple of secured Russian houses. However, with a Republican legislative branch and a pseudo-Republican president, I doubt anything additional will happen. I'm shaking my head. Well, I've sort of been of the guess, not, you know, I guess it's an opinion, but certainly not fact-based, that whatever reprisals the Obama administration takes in its waning days in office will probably be something that Pooty Poot will understand. But the rest of the world may not necessarily even know about. I realize that's a stretch. I mentioned the fact that Pooty Poot is a good, God-fearing, upstanding Christian man. I don't know if you saw his post from immediately following the death of Carrie Fisher. But Franklin Graham, son of Billy, mentioned that unless she had accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as her Lord and personal Lord and Savior, that Carrie Fisher's in hell. Because, you know, Franklin Graham is a classy, classy, classy guy. But moreover, did you know that Franklin has gone for a the occasional wallow with Pooty Poot? Mm-hmm. Back in 2015, Franklin Graham went to Russia. And while in Russia, he praised Pooty Poot up one wall and down the other. Because Putin was returning Russia to its spiritual roots. Whilst America had to get, was getting all secular. Mm-hmm. That secular humanism is destroying America. There was only one problem. At the same time that he was telling Russian journalists that President Obama is leading America down the road and wrong road, taking a stand against God. Well, Franklin was going to host a conference in Moscow alongside the Russian Orthodox Church to talk about all the Christians being persecuted all over the world. But then Franklin Graham had to cancel his own little conclave because Pooty Poot had outlawed evangelism, you know, for people who aren't members of the Russian Orthodox Church. Now, if the Russian Orthodox Church wants to go and beat some faith into you, that's okay with Pooty Poot. But we're not going to have some damn Baptist coming over to Russia and doing the same. Where's the last time we heard something like that? Oh, yeah. Theocratic Muslim countries. Yeah, they'll beat the hell out of you, if not kill you, for trying to proselytize perfectly good Muslims in their country. Well, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is the defender of the faith there in Russia, and he's not going to have... He's not going to have the Methodists coming in and taking over, nor the Lutherans, nor the Presbyterians, nor the Apostolic Holiness people. Or the Pentecostals, whose women have to wear denim skirts that hang to their ankles and never cut their hair and occasionally get it done all the way up to Jesus. So you get the idea. That Pooty Poot, he loves him. He loves him some religion. As long as it's, you know, the right religion. And no, I have not. I'm not neglecting the fact that there are some five human beings dead in Fort Lauderdale this evening, 8 more with gunshot injuries. Maybe that's something we'll talk about in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. But I thought since those two topics, the intel report and the Fort Lauderdale shooting, will probably consume a great deal of the news cycle and the collective press consciousness, that we might look into some other things. You know, for instance, that efforts to put on a real shindig for the inauguration aren't really, you know, going so well. Folks having a hard time finding people who want to march in the inaugural parade of a racist, misogynistic dog whistler to Klansmen and neo-Nazis and the like. Well, they found at least one high school marching band that wants to march here in 14 days. Mm-hmm. West Monroe High School of Louisiana Stan described, no kidding, from time to time as Louisiana's most racist high school will be marching in the inaugural parade. No word yet on whether or not on whether they're going to wear their sheets and pillowcases, or whether you know they'll just use their Confederate grays, you know, the West Monroe marching Kleagles. They've got a Drummond Kleagle Corps. No. Among other things, here even in 2000, well, it's 17 now, but in 2016, they were still waving the Confederate battle flag at sporting events, and I was only halfway kidding because their nickname is, of course, the Rebels. Uh-huh. They still fly Confederate flags inside the high school football stadium. And they still use an old Confederate grizzled veteran as their mascot. They even had a pro-Confederacy rally in West Monroe, Louisiana, back in July 2015, after Dylann Roof went in and murdered 9 people at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston. No, they weren't standing in solidarity with the grieving survivors and relatives of the victims of the shooting. They were standing in solidarity with Dylann Roof and his Confederate flag. So 200 band members, 200 marching West Monroe Rebels will march in the inauguration. They've raised about $175,000 to pay for the trip. In case you were wondering, hey, where is West Monroe, Louisiana? Well, that's the same place the duck doofuses come from. It all begins to kind of make a little sense after a while, doesn't it? What else? Well, also at the inauguration, you can expect to hear from Paula White. She's going to be doing some praying and some invocating at the inauguration. She's a prosperity gospel hustler. Over at the Daily Beast, Betsy Woodruff wrote of her, "Paula White has spent her life taking money from gullible people in the name of religion. Think of Paula White's ministry as the church version of Trump University. She preaches the prosperity gospel, an approach to Christianity that is, shall we say, unorthodox. Prosperity gospel. Preachers teach that God wants to be rich. God wants people to be rich, because he's already rich. And he makes them wealthy as a sign of his blessing and favor. It's a sort of neo-Calvinist approach. The richer you are, the more God loves you. These preachers also teach, there we go. There's that distinction again, teaching versus indoctrination. These preachers also indoctrinate that the way to become wealthy is by, yes, of course, giving money to Paula White. If you make a seed offering, and the bigger the better, says Ms. Woodruff, then preachers like White say the Lord will repay your generosity with bounteous riches. This is a hustle that was first perfected by Oral Roberts with his seed faith doctrine. At a Trump rally in March of 2016, Paula White showed up to speak. She organized a bunch of prosperity gospel hustlers who prayed over him in 2015. And it turns out that if you go back in time to, say, 2006, you'll find one Donald J. Trump, billionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht and a boat and a plane, appearing on Paula White's Gospel Hustle TV program. I thought you might enjoy, well, maybe enjoy is the wrong word, the clip.
What are some of the first steps, the message that you begin to send forth to empower yourself and begin that transition?
Well, first of all, you mentioned the word debt, and nobody knows more about debt than I do, because I owe billions and billions of dollars. But I'm a professional. I mean, I know what I'm doing, and it worked out very well. I negotiated a couple of deals with banks and this and that, but you know, I had a lot of friends who went bankrupt. You'll never hear from them again. I never did that in the early 90s when I was in trouble. I owed billions and billions of dollars. And in a certain way, I love debt, because in good times, there's nothing better than debt. In bad times, it comes back to bite you. So we talk about debt. We talk about the assets and the liabilities of debt. And generally speaking, it's a liability, especially if you're not a really skilled professional.
I was going to say, I don't mean to interrupt, but Mr. Trump, you said something great right there. You said a lot of your friends didn't make it, didn't come back. Why did you make it?
Well, I think because I never, ever quit. I don't give up. And, you know, you have to be born with something. God has to have blessed you with a good brain. I mean, there are a lot of people, when I make speeches, I start off by saying most of you shouldn't be in the room because most of you won't be entrepreneurs. And the people that I'm doing that speech for, in this case, the Learning Annex, because we do a lot of tremendous, we have 15 and 20 and even in one case, 64,000 people showed up in San Francisco for a speech that both of us did. And so we have tremendous crowds. And they never love it when I'm telling them that they probably shouldn't be entrepreneurs, because with that, you have to be born with a certain something, but you do have to be born with this. So in a sense, that's lucky. God has to have blessed you with a good mind, or at least a business mind.
Or a dad who left you a couple of million dollars. Or maybe God helped you find Roy Cohn when you got a bottle of... I'm sorry, Marty just wrote, can I get a bottle of dressing to go along with that word salad? He's making Sarah Palin sound literate. Now, God blesses you by directing you to Roy Cohn when you and your daddy get busted for illegally refusing to rent properties to people with skin the color, a shade darker than a paper bag. Yeah, that kind of blessing. Right. But I find all that talk about debt to be more than a little bit interesting, because he was very proud of debt. You know, debt's very good in good times, but it'll come back to bite you later. How would you know? Of course, he's got, God only knows how many millions of dollars, near a billion in one case, he's dodged and bailed out and bankrupted on. Yeah, all his friends declared bankruptcy, but he never did, except he did. And then there's this one little salient fact. I don't know if the deposition's taken place yet, but he's due to be deposed in a lawsuit over restaurants. Are you familiar with this? Those of you who know Washington, D.C., know about the old post office building there on Pennsylvania Avenue. It's somewhere around 9th or 11th. And that's what got turned into the new Trump International Hotel. And it's been a work in progress for a while now. I remember going past it back and forth over the course of working on the AIC Act, thinking what a damn shame it was that lovely old building was going to be turned into a tawdry, hyper-baroque exercise in tackiness, which it is. But still, it had space for three flagship restaurants. And among others, they signed on Jose Andres, a superstar Spanish chef who already had properties in D.C. Tony Bourdain has featured Jose Andres a couple of times in his program. I think it was a no reservations program from some several years back, where he went to one of Jose Andres' restaurants in D.C. And when Benito Cheeto there, who isn't nearly as orange in that video from 2006 as he now is, I personally think it's because he has to use more spray tan to cover up the syphilitic rash that afflicts him. Well, when he opened his campaign, he started out, with all the happy horse shit. No, hateful horse shit about Mexican rapists and Mexicans being rapists. And Jose Andres, immediately the red flags went up and he said, whoop, I'm out of here. Because he knew that he would be ruined if he continued to do to be involved in a business relationship with a xenophobic, ignorant freak like Donald Trump. And so the Trump Organization immediately turned around and sued Jose Andres, as well as the other restaurateur, whose name I can't immediately recall. Who bailed out too and got sued. Well, Trump was supposed to be deposed for as many as 7 hours as early as this week. I don't know if it's happened yet. But that does happen and will continue to happen because of a door that Kellyanne Conway's husband opened up back during the great Clinton penis chase. You'll recall that Bill Clinton was allowed by the court system to be deposed while still president of the United States in the Paula Jones lawsuit. Well, there are 3 digits worth of lawsuits against Donald Trump right now, even as we speak. And so he will probably be deposed, and not in a good way, not in the way that we would prefer. He will be subjected to the deposition process repeatedly over the course of his presidency. Ah, okay, Ron tells me he was deposed yesterday. I'll bet that's it. Hey, Marty, talk about your word salad. Yeah. So let's go back and finish the clip. We'll pick up a little bit so we can get all the context.
That you have to be born with a certain something, but you do have to be born with this. So in a sense, that's lucky. God has to have blessed you with a good mind, or at least a business mind. Now, that's not to say that that's everything, because I also know people that aren't that smart, but they're very happy people. They have great families. I mean, maybe they're better off than I am to be, in a certain sense. But when it comes to business and when it comes to making money and it comes to some of the assets that we do have, I like to explain it. I understand it. I understand the ups and the downs and the problems and all of the great successes and assets. And I like to explain it. And that's really what we've done in the book. And I think we're going to make a lot of people a lot happier.
Because, of course, the whole thing, the whole reason for the conversation, the whole reason for going on a prosperity gospel television show in 2006 was because he was hustling another one of his hustles, in this particular instance, a book from 2006 with his name on it, which, of course, he didn't write. Yeah. And so the prosperity gospel is going to be front and center at the inauguration. I'm sure you're so happy to know that. Oh, by the way, the other restaurateur, Soapbox Geezer just let me know, Jeffrey Zakarian is the other chef in litigation with the Trump thugs. Now, what's going in where Zakarian and Jose Andres decided not to go? Sushi Nakazawa by Alessandro Borgognone, B-O-R-G-O-G-N-O-N-E, Borgognone, in an interview with Anthony Bourdain over at Eater.com. Bourdain noted, the question was, so what do you make of Alessandro Borgognone bringing Sushi Nakazawa to the Trump D.C. hotel? And Bourdain simply said, I will never eat in his restaurant. I have utter contempt for him, utter and complete contempt, just like David Burke. I mean, I never had the highest opinion of him in the first place, but I guess he's the last person in this life I should look to for principles. Burke went in and took over the space Jose Andres had originally occupied and promptly tried to poach his staff, I hear. This was after Jose reached out and said, everyone welcome him to Washington. Don't hold it against him just because I decided to pull out. So Burke's a steaming loaf of shit, as far as I'm concerned, and feel free to quote me. It's not helpful, that sort of thing, opening in a contentious hotel. I'm not asking you to start putting up barricades now, but when they come and ask you, are you with us, you do have an option. You can say, no thanks, guys, I don't look good in a brown shirt. Makes me look a little, I don't know, not great. It's not slimming. Asked what he thought was going through the minds of David Burke and Alessandro Borgognone, Bourdain said, the question was, so what do you think was going through their heads when they were like, I'm going to throw in with the bad guys? And Bourdain said, I'm going to get in good with the president and make me some money. What did Kanye West go to Trump Tower for? Why did Al Gore go? Why did Mitt Romney go? Exactly. So I thought that was worth discussing because I don't think we've ever had a president coming into office with multiple hundreds of lawsuits personally against him. And the question arises, if a consensual act of oral sex is grounds for impeachment, why aren't multiple hundreds of lawsuits alleging tortious or, at the very least, contract-breaching conduct? Because in the restaurant suit, that's Trump's gang suing other people. These other suits are other people suing Trump. Yeah. It's going to be busy. And of course, you will see an attempt to completely subvert the entire legal process in order to protect his broke ass. Because that's the other thing to remember. He's broke. And there's now some documentary evidence to that effect. Federal Election Commission filings from the campaign. Some look, it looked directly at instances where Trump is financially leveraged all on his own. And that is substantial. If he had to get out of everything he's in, he probably would wind up a net negative. But then there's all the other stuff that he's also involved in where he's party to, but not the sole party to, the debt. And that extends into the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, and perhaps billions. And if it all had to be sold off and put into a blind trust, the blind trust would be nothing but a bottle of red ink. Because again, Donald Trump is not a captain of industry. You know, whatever nasty things we might say about, oh, Henry Ford, the man actually did something vis-a-vis business theory in perfecting his own version of the assembly line and then trying to create a car that his own workers could afford to buy. That's what made the Model T the icon that it was. Alexander Graham Bell, Thomas Edison. Yeah, there's plenty of criticism to go around for both of those men. John D. Rockefeller. Carnegie. Yeah, on and on and on. But they were actually doing something. All Donald Trump is doing is shuffling securities. It's a rather high-flown version of check kiting. And it can all go to pieces tomorrow. Maybe that's why he tries to end up, to exert the leverage that he does over business concerns, like Toyota, whom he cost something like $2 billion by attacking on Twitter. Man, if you ever wanted an example of one of the prime failings of capitalism and the so-called free market, that's it. He demanded that Toyota alter its business practices in Mexico, or else he personally, screw a bunch of Congress, he personally, Trump, would impose a big border tax, I think those were his exact words, on Toyota cars that come from Mexico to the United States. Huh? Yeah. And when he did that, Toyota's stock value tanked by about 5%, or around $2 billion. Now, it'll recover and rebound. But still, it sort of shows the fragility of the market in that one ignorant, damaged-brained individual with sufficient power can just make $2 billion disappear. He's gone after Ford. He's gone after GM. And perhaps all of this is a shot across the bow to make sure that nobody goes after him. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Subject line, something special that Trump speaks of. Trump told Paula White that a successful entrepreneur is born with a something special. He didn't say what exactly, but it's probably this. If you can't blind him with brilliance, baffle him with bullshit. Well, he was pointing at his little Trumpy head when he said that. I should have noted. By the way, the old post office is at 12th in Pennsylvania. Well, I said 9th, 11th. It's close. He did the first deposition for the first restaurant case a while back. Gave his deposition for the other one a few days ago, particularly yesterday, according to Ron in Canada. But that's another thing. Apparently, Trump is a sort of, and who would be surprised, really, of a eugenicist. He thinks that one's genes are determinative of one's potential for success. And being born the son of a millionaire, I'm sure had nothing to do with it. You can see the same sort of thing. I don't know if I've still got this or not. I think I do. You can see the same sort of thing in, there it is, in his remarks about other members of the working class, or members of the working class, because he's never been one. Back in 1990, he gave an interview to Playboy magazine, Trump did. And somehow or another, this just didn't quite make the rounds out here in coal country, where we're worried about those poor miners, those poor people. Trump told Playboy in 1990, "If I had been the son of a coal miner, I would have left the damn mines. But most people don't have the imagination, or whatever, to leave their mine." So all those people whose asses he blew smoke up are, to him, people who don't have imagination or whatever enough to not be coal miners. Yeah, I know. It doesn't matter. It's all Obama's fault anyway. Note coming in from Steve. Old Donald sounds just like the new Don. Flippant, vacuous, cockless, sure. Cockless, sure. Yeah, that's a member of the fraternity of Steve in China. Who also noted, regarding last night's program, talking about Dylann Roof and death penalty and whatnot. "I'm not an advocate for the death penalty. It is a popular option. But when has the institution of the death penalty become synonymous with a general notion that its continuation, its enactment, is illegitimate, insufficient, uncivilized?" Well, I think, historically speaking, I think it probably comes from an attempt to understand the cruel and unusual punishment clause of the Constitution in a more modern light than, say, 1787. "Civilization," Steve says, "almost by definition, is perfectly congenial to the notion of state-sponsored, otherwise communal, murder." It's true enough. "The concept of law being inequitably applied, the failure of justice to be served, constitutes the central and predominant objection to capital punishment per se. While the prerogative of retributive balance or settlement, the far deeper impulse to see life-taking revenged, serves as a constant reminder of the eternal difference between justice realized and common satisfaction obtained. I question the motives of anyone who finds satisfaction in something like the enduring pain, the endless remorse of one condemned to a life incarcerated." Well, then I suppose my motives are subject to question. But one would hope that, given enough time, the likes of Dylann Roof would come to the point where he realized that his actions were not okay, that they were in fact evil, vicious. "Most of all," Steve says, "I question such a decent citizen's culpability, their sense of time, of personal, unpredictable death, as though they sat in judgment, immortal." Not me. I ponder that kind of stuff all the time. But I do think it vastly unfair to Dylann Roof's victims, who probably contemplated their own mortality because, you know, they were in church and they believed in a worldview that said that they were going to go and live beyond pearly gates and walk streets of gold and sing Hosanna all the live long day. They contemplated it, and Dylann Roof took that from them, took everything from them. Steve continues, "I wonder, even by reminder, how it is that the most despised or abhorrent criminal is made out to be an object of endless comparison rather than a lost and utterly worthless example of humanity best consigned to immediate oblivion. There are those deemed best destroyed by the civilized, if civilization mean anything at all. While the measure of the stick, the precise degree or moment of the act, is always in doubt. To gloat over the entombment of another, however sanitized the display, is vulgar. I don't think I was gloating. To speculate upon the continual suffering, leastwise the perpetual penalty of the condemned party, is plainly cruel. It may even be congratulatory. And we've had enough of our sideshow freaks, our sanctioned boogeymen, to last several lifetimes. California's chief freak is on death's doorstep right now. And aren't you sick and tired of giving a righteous shit about his sorry, miserable ass? I sure as fuck am. Regards, Steve, in China. I think that's an interesting point. That there is some sort of balance to be struck between civilization just ridding itself of its toxins, or tucking its toxins away where the toxins can be forgotten about if not eliminated, or to let them self-eliminate. Interesting. Thanks, Steve. James writing in, maybe Trump will sign a bill outlawing debtor's prison. Nah, he'll just pardon himself. And again, in China, Steve says, you know, we already have a tax smacks. We already have a border tax. It's called Desperately Poor Humans Crossing the Border in Search of Work. Note how all the arrows seem to point north, never south. Right, Canada? Well, that was one of the funnier parts of it all. The Toyota issue was created because Toyota was going to move the production of some small portion of its vast output, not from the United States to Mexico, but from Canada to Mexico. Uh-huh. Randy points out, you don't need a state actor to hack a computer. Just reference the Black Hat and White Hat annual Las Vegas conferences. Some of the best of them can hack a totally up-to-date Mac in minutes. Granted, they have physical access to the target Macs, but you get the idea. Well, sure, but that doesn't eliminate the obverse, that hackers can't be state actors. And based on the report issued today, the people that we pay to know these sorts of things say that they have high confidence in the fact that the orders came directly from Putin and that they were executed by the Russian successor in interest to the KGB, that organization created Guccifer 2.0, as well as DCLeaks.com. One other little thing, and this, I guess you would describe this as NSFW, not safe for work. But one of the things that happens when nasty-ass autocratic regimes come in is often you will have a flourishing in the art world. Because art is where we go about the business of talking about things like justice and the culture and civilization. And so it was that Aria Watson, who is 18 years old and a student at Clatsop Community College in Oregon, created a series of photographs. She was taking introduction to photography there at Clatsop Community College, and she created a photo series called Signed by Trump with the hashtag symbol in front of it. She went out and pulled some of the more disgusting, misogynistic, sexist, filthy things that Donald Trump has said over the years. And then she wrote them on portions of various women's bodies and photograph them. For instance, a side view, and you can't see any faces. These are people she knew that were willing to be photographed. A side view of a woman wearing nothing but a pair of blue lace panties. And written down on her, down her flank and down the side of her thigh, quote, "Young and beautiful piece of ass," unquote, Trump. Or the bare chest of another woman, and written across that bare chest, "A person who is very flat-chested is very hard to be a 10, Trump. The back of a young woman, seated on her knees. "Must be a pretty picture, you dropping to your knees, Trump." A woman with her hand over her crotch. "Grab 'em by the pussy, Trump." Interviewed by BuzzFeed, she said, "All I wanted from these photos was to help people realize who Donald Trump really is, and I just want to feel heard. I know most people are set on their opinions about Trump, but I hope just one person sees signed by Trump and it opens their eyes." With that, the side view of a woman, her breasts in profile, and the words, "No longer a 10. She got 50,000 notes in a single day on her Tumblr account. That has since doubled over the course of a month or so. A young woman looking back over her left shoulder, and on her left shoulder, on her back, the words, "You have to treat them like shit, Trump." So if you want to see it, go to Tumblr, or I don't know, maybe it, I don't think it showed, I don't think Twitter allowed it. Facebook took it down. Instagram took it down. But the hashtag is signed by Trump. Because after all, he's the kind of guy who goes on Christian broadcasting to talk about how blessed he's been by God or whatever. So let's take a little break and get the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable fired up. If you want to participate again on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. And we'll get everything started. If you can't use Skype, you can always use the stress line. It works better for some than for others. But that number is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. H-O-R-N. Okay, then. Break time. The Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable gets started momentarily. You can also find, by the way, thank you to Tony. You can find the signed by Trump photos at Marie Claire, M-A-R-I-E-C-L-A-I-R-E, marieclaire.com Aria Watson, Trump NSFW photo series. MarieClaire.com. Heather says, those BuzzFeed pics sound great, and kudos to the young woman who took them. Took some courage. I wonder how many times she's had her life threatened. You know, by the Trumpanzees. Oh, dang it. Phone's supposed to be muted. Oh, well. Anyway, we still have about $300 to raise this evening. One at $300, two at $150, four at $75, eight at $37.50, ten at $30, 30 at $10. To finish off the first week of January without being in a hole. So thanks, everybody. Hopefully we will. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. Friday on the Front Porch begins. I'm Bob Kincaid.
She wants my
Nothing particularly enigmatic about that bumper for this Friday on the front porch. The Grateful Dead from the Mars Hotel and Money Money. 1974, that album. I love U.S. Blues. It's one of my favorite Dead songs. Let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where Sparky, as usual, is holding down the fort. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I just made it in here in time for everything after being outside, getting stuff rounded up before the storm.
What is this big storm of which you speak?
Well, I have to look it up here, give you the full information.
I mean, I saw some reference to some pretty serious snowfall in the upper elevations of Siskiyou County.
Yeah, a couple of nights ago. Flood watches are starting because an atmospheric river, a narrow quarter of concentrated moisture, will likely produce a prolonged period of moderate to heavy rain, especially Sunday through early Monday. Snow levels expected to remain above past levels during the heaviest precipitation. Some places may get 7 to 15 inches.
That include you?
No, 2 to 6 in the Central Valley, 3 to 9 inches in the coastal and Shasta Mountains, and 7 to 15 inches in the northeast foothills, Mother Lode, Western Plumas Mountains, and Sierra Nevada. It's supposed to be that we haven't seen a storm that carries this much moisture since December of 2005.
Wow. I mean, are you worried? I remember when the creek got out of its banks a couple of years ago. You worried about something like that happening again?
No, hopefully all the debris cleaned out of it now, and it won't do that. Because what happened is all the debris came down. It's an overflow. It's a runoff, and there's a bridge on 99E here, just out where I live. And all the junk got smashed up underneath the bridge and caused like a beaver dam effect. And that's what led to the flood.
And on the one hand, though, you can't really complain a whole bunch about rain.
No, not now. I mean, the drought will be eventually over up here in Northern California. I don't know about Southern. Because we've had more rain than I can.
And I mean, some of that stuff does percolate down into the water table, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Redo the aquifer. I mean, there's a lot of the water that comes down the Sacramento River fingers out and goes into the aquifer.
I remember you sending me pictures of the Shasta Dam that was practically dry?
Yeah, it'll be full pretty soon. Hopefully we'll get to see water go over the spillway again. That's pretty cool when that happens.
What are the ice caps? What are the ice caps looking like on Lassen and Shasta?
Oh, they're nice. They're just solid white. You can't see any rocks or anything. I mean, I don't know what the. I mean, the ski area on Mount Shasta has been going great guns since Thanksgiving, and I know all the ones in the Sierra are just kicking ass this year,
and not having to make snow.
I wouldn't think so.
Well,
the other day they said they were going to get like socked with like about 10 feet of snow around Tahoe.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you've had a busy afternoon. Let's check in with some of the other denizens of the group. Ron's wandered in this evening. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I wanted to add a couple of tidbits to compliment Sparky's weather report. Went to San Diego, the reputed home of the best weather in North America.
Hey,
hey, the week of December 20th through 27th. We had 4 inches of rain and 40-mile-an-hour winds while I was there. So over the week, so they asked me to go up to San Francisco. I did. The weather followed me, and we had 2.5 inches of rain the week I was in Oakland. So I came home so that it would start snowing again in Ottawa. I'm just a weather harbinger. I feel like the old character from Al Cap.
Rod, I think you need to go to Eastern Tennessee to help ease their drought.
Too many Bubbas down there.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm doing fine, Bob. Thank you for asking.
And have you heard from the Reverend Craig lately?
Not lately. I do have a special treasure that in hand. What's remaining half of a bottle of 15-year-old Pappy's.
Oh, I hope Jay Cruzan's not listening.
I have a good friend who picked it up for me in San Francisco a couple of years ago and held on to it for me. And I'd like to say that I'm the kind of person that would share. I'll share damn near everything, but I'm not sharing this.
Is it really that special?
Yes.
Because I recall back when, Jay Cruzan's Pappy Van Winkle challenge is technically still out there. But I recall at the time you sounded like you weren't particularly impressed.
Well, I had some 12-year-old that my son had picked up. Didn't do much for me. So, the 15, it's like an entirely different whiskey. I mean, it lingers on the mouth for at least 5 minutes. It's just glorious. Wonderful stuff. But that's all I got. I'm happy and content. I'm batching it for the next 5 weeks. So I've got a good stash of excellent frozen meals waiting for me, and I got some good whiskey, and I can watch whatever the hell I want on TV. Life is good.
You can just go right around the corner and buy a Cuban cigar any old time you want to?
Yay, verily, I can. But I wasn't going to mention that because I know what that does to you. But good whiskey, maybe some chocolate, good Cuban cigar. I'll suffer through the winter.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. It doesn't entirely suck to be you. Well, I am here to tell you though that the times have changed here in your old stomping grounds. We no longer believe in snow removal, Ron.
I heard that. What you had is what we would call a skiff of snow. You remember that term?
Hell,
right?
I'd call it a skiff because it was.
How cold was it?
Well, as of right now, it is 17 degrees.
The little traces of snow that I hate are the ones where it's right around, anywhere between 30 to 34, and it's just enough to get on the road and make it like driving on ball bearings.
Yeah, the night, and this was the big wet, sloppy stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff, the stuff that in your headlights makes your eyes begin to cross after a while.
Yeah. Most of the snow we get up here is small and fine.
Dry.
Fairly dry. And you can get, 8 inches of it. And within a couple of days, it's packed down to about 2 inches.
Well, we're going to get a low of 13 tonight. And then tomorrow night and Sunday night, we get 8.
It's roughly the same here.
Here at the mansion, it's going to be like, as I've said in the past, not having walls.
And breathing coal smoke.
You know, that's the weird thing. Not so much this winter. And I think I know why. There's a new baby on the ground. I mean, not on the ground, but there's a new baby who doesn't need to be breathing that shit.
Ooh.
And so consequently, I think maybe they've found an alternative heat source.
You should be grateful that other people have sex, Bob.
I never said I wasn't, Ron. I just don't think about it a lot. Remember, I'm not a Baptist anymore.
True.
Well, before we run around to other members of the group, I wanted to offer you a chance to expand upon the note that you sent me prior to airtime about your take on Big Bad Vladdy Daddy.
I'm still stunned. I mean, that is paramount to an actual invasion. I mean, that's going right at the roots of our entire system. And I would regard it as an act of war.
Well, the coverage that I've read, Ron, speaks in terms of a deliberate attempt to diminish Americans' trust in democratic institutions, little d. And if that's the case, then what is it? What does Russia want us to become? I mean, aren't we oligarchic enough for them as it is?
I would think if they had an objective, keeping in mind that Putin seems to be as thin-skinned as Trump, it's simply to embarrass us. That would be one objective for sure. You can rest assured that if we had decided to undermine, by using the same methods to undermine the Russian government, he certainly wouldn't be just kicking out a few diplomats.
True enough, but do you not think that we might be inclined to not do something quite so overt or public?
Oh, I agree with that hypothesis entirely. But as long as nobody finds out about it, except for Putin,
I mean, if he wakes up with a horse's head in his bed, isn't he going to maybe worry a little bit? Or are we still in the stupid phase where we want to put itching powder in a wetsuit?
No, I think it would be something more along the lines of SEAL teams planting fake packages on the hulls of Russian ships and things of that ilk.
Never even thought about that. That would be interesting.
Yes, it would.
Because that's a lot more. I don't know. That's a lot more impressive than simply calling Pooty Poot on his private line and asking him if he has Prince Albert in a can.
Yeah.
Or if his refrigerator is working. Of course, it's not working. This is Russia. We do not need refrigerators. We have winter. We are fierce, tough Russians.
Squirrels. Yes.
Moose and squirrel.
Yeah.
Keep calling me, asking me if have Prince Albert in can. Exactly.
But they just announced they were pulling a Russian carrier back from operations in Syria. It would be interesting to find out if they ever found anything on the hull. They pulled it out of there for a reason.
And, of course, I saw that plane go down with the choir on it. And, you know, in terms of skullduggery and cloak and dagger stuff, you kind of go, how about that? Kind of wonder.
Well, I think it was because their pilot was doped up.
Could be.
He's a Russian. They all take dope, right?
Well, they never drink water. They only drink vodka. Right, Mandrake?
Far less diarrhea.
I can't resist a Dr. Strangelove reference.
I know.
Well, let's keep things rolling. Chime in anytime if you wish. Are you there, Billable Rick?
Yes, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing okay. We have, it's basically T-minus 14 days till the Orange Menace takes over.
Otherwise known as the giant shitstorm.
No kidding.
And the Congress is off and running. Did you notice? Did you notice that they elevated a 19th century provision that allows federal workers they don't like to be only paid $1 a day?
I didn't hear that. No.
Yeah.
No. Jeez, $1 a day, really?
Yep. I wish I was kidding.
They're aiming that at the federal workforce in general. They're trying to break the unions, I guess, right? Is that the game?
I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's the right to work is going national, Bob. Right? Right to work for nothing. It's just amazing. I mean, you know, despite the intelligence briefings and so forth. Oh, Bob, do you know why Trump didn't get the intelligence briefing the same day as Obama did on Thursday?
Why is that?
Because he was in a deposition in that case you were talking about.
That was it.
7-hour deposition. Yeah. So he had to, you know, he had to be deposed on that day. And apparently the restaurateur who he sued has suggested they settle the case by each of them donating to, like, you know, a veterans organization or something like that. And Trump said, no way, forget it. We're going to trial. So, I mean, this guy is just such a pig, you know. He can't be satisfied with winning, if you want to call that winning. And, you know, he can't say that the intelligence agencies have it right, because then that would, you know, cast doubt on the idea that, you know, he did it himself as far as winning the election. And perhaps most importantly, it could underscore his collusion with the Russians during the election, because he had people in touch with the Russians, you know, months before the election, you know, after he became the nominee. And he had Manafort, you know, involved, and, you know, he had one of his aides go to visited Russia and met with all the mucky mucks there before the Republican convention. So, you know, the guy's up to his eyeballs in the collusion. And he says it's a partisan thing, but the reason why it's not a partisan thing is all the Republicans agree with the intelligence agencies that Russia did have a role in, you know, favoring Trump in the election. So it's pretty much Trump against the world. It's just the...
Well, you know what he said after he got the briefing, right?
I don't know. What did he say?
While Russia, China, and other countries, outside groups and people, are constantly trying to break through the cyber infrastructure of our governmental institutions, businesses, and organizations, including the Democrat National Committee, Democratic dick, there was absolutely no effect on the outcome of the election, including the fact that there was no tampering whatsoever with voting machines.
Was that a tweet by the Twitler?
No, that's more than 140 characters.
Well, but he's been breaking up his tweets lately into, you know, like multiple part ones, I've noticed. You know?
Well, there's a link here. It says Mr. Trump said, so let's see where that takes us.
Yeah. I mean, the difference here is that this is active involvement in trying to influence the outcome of the election.
It was a released statement, Rick.
Oh, wow. I can't believe it.
I had a constructive meeting and conversation with the leaders of the intelligence community this afternoon. I have tremendous respect for the work and service done by the men and women of this community to our great nation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, that report, you know, what Russia did is it goes beyond just your typical hacking and espionage and stuff like that. It's actually trying to fix the result by ways of, you know, by means of, you know, penetrating the security and leaking the information. I mean, you know, China didn't do that. Okay. When they broke into the OPM website and, you know, obtained data on, I don't know how many million federal employees, and I'm probably one of those who they obtained data on. In this instance, the Russians released it to intermediaries who then gave it to WikiLeaks.
Oh, who incidentally is real pissed off.
WikiLeaks is?
Yes. WikiLeaks is having a having a little fit.
Is Assange like saying, I'm shocked that gambling is going on in this establishment?
No, he's mad. He's mad that the government issued the report that it did, because the government has no business. Now, granted, WikiLeaks is all about government transparency, but they object when government tries to be transparent.
About WikiLeaks?
Well, about the Russian hacking.
Well, and WikiLeaks' involvement in being dupes for Russia. I mean, I don't think they were dupes. I think Assange knew what the hell he was doing. He's on the payroll of RT, which is a Russian propaganda outlet for English-speaking countries. And unfortunately, a number of people in this community, I think, have been influenced by the RT coverage, and, you know, to the point where they think that Pootie Bear is actually not a bad guy.
Oh, he's just a big, snuggly, cuddly little Russian bear. You just love him, or you just want to snuggle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what the Russians wanted here is Russia is on the verge of bankruptcy. I guess their sovereign debt rating is like, you know, I don't know if there's a grade F or whatever, but that's basically what it is. It's in the toilet because of the collapse in the oil market, the prices, because they're basically a country that is, you know, it's really an oil can, I think. I forget the expression that McCain used, but he described him as a country that masquerades as an oil can or something like that. A country masquerading as an oil can, you know, because they don't make anything. You know, they just all they make are weapons, and you know, they sell oil, and so, you know, there was talk. You know, I read like a 3 or 4 year old article, or 3 or 4 month old article in Time magazine, talking about how strapped the Russian economy was, you know, due to the low oil prices. And the sanctions, the Western sanctions. And so, you know, Putin decided to go all in to get Trump elected because those sanctions are strangling the country, and they desperately need to get those released to give the economy a fighting chance. Because ultimately, when you're a dictator and the economy goes south and it stays south for a long time, you know, uneasy lies the crown, so to speak, you know?
Oh, and just to give you a little background on that dollar a day thing I mentioned a minute ago, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the Holman Rule, H-O-L-M-A-N. And it was created by an Indiana congressman in 1876. And under it, any member of Congress can propose amending an appropriations bill to single out a single government employee or cut a specific program.
Oh, geez.
Now, a majority of the House and Senate have to approve any such amendment, but in effect, as the Washington Post writes, opponents and supporters agree that the work of 2.1 million civil servants designed to be insulated from politics is now vulnerable to the whims of elected officials.
So, did the House actually act to reinstate the Holman Rule, or what are we talking about?
Yes, Bob? Yes, they did.
Jeez, that is nuts.
They passed it, yes.
Did the Senate pass it?
The Senate doesn't have to, do they, Bob? It's a House rule.
Jeez. Yeah. Oh, because they start the appropriations process. Okay, right. Well, they could put that in a budget, you know, that we're only going to pay people on in the EPA a dollar a day, for example, or let's say, you know, pick an agency they demonize, the Energy Department or whatever, you know. Maybe the Commerce Department, you name it, maybe the IRS. Yeah, the IRS. We'll pay him a dollar a day. The Senate's never going to agree to that.
And the guy who did it was Representative H. Morgan Griffith of the Old Dominion, Virginia.
He wants
members of Congress to be able to control the details of the work of the various agencies of the federal government.
Yeah.
And when it was pointed out that he said it's unlikely but not impossible that members will go crazy and cut huge swaths of the government workforce, he said, "Well, I can't tell you it won't happen. The power is there, but isn't that appropriate?
Who runs this here country? The people of the new United States or the people on the people's payroll?
I mean, these guys are such, you know, they're such fuckheads. I don't know how else to describe them. They're just mean bastards, Bob.
Mean people suck, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one reason I left the federal government, because I was tired of having pay freezes for like 2 or 3 years and the constant budget battles and, you know, government closures and so forth, and being furloughed and all of those, that crap, that political stuff, you know. And, you know, when the IRS closed down in 2014, October of 2014, I had to forego my trip to Yosemite, a camping trip to Yosemite. You know, I got to the point where I just resented the fact that, you know, I was being used as a pawn in the struggle by the Republicans against the Democrats. I guess as part of the Republicans' attempts to strangle the government in the bathtub, basically.
Well, and I think this has to be filed with that as well. And moreover, you know how we've talked from time to time about, gee, I wonder what they're doing with the left hand while we're all watching the right?
Yeah.
Well, this rule was passed while everybody was having a conniption over the Office of...
Congressional Ethics?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, that was another example, though. I mean, I think that was a self-inflicted wound on their part. I don't think that was part of a plan, a Machiavellian strategy to distract from what else they were doing, you know? I mean, there's just so much bad stuff they're doing that it just so happened that the OCE was the thing that, you know, people focused on for a couple of days. And, I mean, it just proves that the Republicans are tone deaf. And that they don't know how to govern. They may be able to get elected, you know, on platforms like Build This Wall and, you know, repeal and replace Obamacare. But then when it comes down to it, you know, once they're faced with repealing it, they have nothing to replace it with. And so if you do a repeal and delay strategy, let's say you postpone the abolition for 2 to 3 years, it's going to throw the insurance market into, you know, topsy-turvy. And it's not going to affect just those on, you know, on Obamacare, but everybody who has private health insurance, which is almost all Americans, and Medicare and Medicaid. And, you know, it could cause a, you know, major crisis to the point where, you know, the government might be forced to just adopt a Medicare for all. I mean, I'm kind of taking that to the extreme, but, you know. That might be the only way we ever get to Medicare for all, if the Republicans botch things so much that there's no other way, you know, to get people covered. And if the insurance companies, you know, they lose 20 million patients, 20 million customers because of Obamacare being abolished, well, they got to make up their profit on the rest of the people who do have private insurance. And so those rates are going to go sky high. And you think, you know, the middle class is going to put up with that? I'd like to think not, you know.
But
yeah,
you
know,
and you know, with that dollar rule, you have to, you know, these things have to be played in context, Rick. Remember, with the dollar rule, the Trump administration has been issuing questions to various agencies. For instance, they asked the State Department and the Homeland Security for the names of everyone who has worked on countering violent extremism.
Oh.
And they've asked the State Department for the names of everyone who worked on women's issues.
Yeah, yeah. And they asked for the names
of people who'd worked on climate change.
Climate change, yeah, who went to the climate change conferences and so forth.
Now, yeah. I'm sure none of these butter wouldn't melt in their mouths, wouldn't say shit if they had a mouthful. Moral, ethical, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Republicans, I'm sure they would never use something like the Holman rule as a cudgel to stifle dissent or even discussion of important things like science, would they?
Of course. God, Bob, what would ever make you think that? The Republicans are so honorable.
I mean, they never do, just their own conduct, that's all.
They never hold people hostage except on all the occasions that they do. you know?
Exactly. Well, let's keep wandering around the room a little bit. Hang on here for a minute. Let me check. Okay. Well, let's check in with Scott and Punky.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Not too much. A couple of things. First to Ron from the frozen north. Now, when you came out here to San Diego and encountered massive amounts of rain, did you go down to the Convention and Visitors Bureau and get your coupon for your make good visit?
No, I did not.
Well, they don't have one, but that would be a good idea.
I went to the Midway tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I apologize. You know, I'm hard pressed. I mean, we've been in a drought for like a year and a half, 2 years. The rain is truly helping, but the Visitors Bureau hates that weather. As a matter of fact, I posted on Facebook. It was like, it was either right after Christmas or right before New Year's. You know, I had to run up to the pharmacy to get my refills for the coming month, and it was raining like hell. And as I was coming back, I said, I really feel sorry for these people who come here. They save up all their money. They come here for the holiday, you know, Christmas, New Year's holiday, you know, to get away from wherever they are, where it's already cold with snow up to your ass. And they got to sit all week in the damn hotel room because it's raining cats and dogs and cold as a witch's tit. Okay. Here, you know, in San Diego. So I feel bad for all concerned. So come back. We'll make it up to you come spring or summer.
Oh, I will. I think the high when we were there was 54 degrees.
Yeah, that just can't suck enough. I mean, Bob, I
put on a pair of shorts and flip-flops and a T-shirt and walked up and down the beach so everybody would know I was a Canadian.
I thought you were going to say, and yelled, Lafayette, we are here.
Bob, I wanted to remind you and also the listeners, back in the autumn, I guess, I was talking about a then new documentary called Command and Control, which was about the 1980 accident at a Titan II missile complex in Damascus, Arkansas, when one of the workers dropped a wrench and it pierced the side of an armed Titan II missile, fully fueled, fully armed with a warhead or two on top. And it was a hellacious mess, to say the least, trying to repair the damage, disarm the bomb, and clean up the mess from the fuel spill. Well, that documentary will be on PBS in the coming week, and I'll post it in the chat room. It'll be January 10th, which is Tuesday, on American Experience. Tuesday, January 10th. Check your local listings on PBS. And I've never seen the documentary, but I've heard it's quite good. And it's a cautionary tale of what a freak accident or near miss could do in terms of massive destruction in populated areas.
That just doesn't sound pleasant at all.
No, hell no. But
I hate to say it, and I am not at all diminishing the value of the documentary work, Scott. But I feel like I would feel considerable stress watching this thing.
Oh yeah, you and me both.
And I'm at a place right now. I mean, sitting here counting down the days to the first thunderous rolls of the giant 4 year, 8 year, possibly 16 year shitstorm, and I'm not barking at you or Punky, but I don't know how much more stress I can take.
Well, here's my word to the wise, and as you know, a word to the wise is sufficient, or should be anyway. And I posted this in the Skype chat a little while ago. I hear that the Vegas odds makers are busily taking bets on whether Trump will, as Alan Watts might have put it, terminate the human race in a mutual massacre of scapegoats. Trouble is, if you bet big that he will, you won't be around long enough to collect your winnings.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's your irony of the day.
Yeah, the mushroom cloud goes up and you, I win!
That's the ultimate VIG, as they call it, folks.
Yeah.
You never have to pay off the winning bet.
You know, I would like to think that everything's going to be okay, or at least survivable. But from day to day, in today's world, with this orange menace in charge of things, you know, the tangerine jizz trumpet, Mr. Trump, who the hell knows? You can, it's like when you have like a severe bipolar situation and you rapidly cycle, you know, in a single day, we can go to calm, to all the way down the scale to thoroughly depressed, all the way back up the scale to halfway okay, you know, in the course of a couple of hours. This is the future that these morons have voted into being for us. Strap in and hang on, boys and girls. It's going to be an interesting ride.
And I don't... I'm looking at a Reuters story right now. Anarchist groups are threatening to disrupt the inauguration.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, being as how they're anarchists, how did they come to that decision? Oh, we're going to disrupt the inauguration. No, we're not. Put it to a vote. No, that's oppressive.
Well, there's going to be a lot of groups. There's going to be a huge women's march, a million people or more.
The day after,
the day
yeah.
After, I read something the other day that something like 4,200 joints, pre-rolled joints, are going to be distributed for a gigantic smoke-in. You know, it's going to, it makes me miss my old stomping ground, Washington, AC/DC, or as we used to call it, Disneyland on the Potomac. 62.
Yeah, everybody,
miles.
Everybody blaze up and shotgun toward Trump.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe he'll get a little
blow a great big dope cloud at Trump and see if maybe it'll help rewire his sick brain.
Jeez, but I, you know, it's at times like this that I miss being right there, just a simple bus ride or a subway ride from where all the fun is happening. I say fun, in quotes.
Could not pay me to be in Washington, D.C. on January the 20th.
Oh, come on, Bob. Where's your spirit of adventure?
Yeah.
Hey, I remember the other day I was talking about the Vietnam War moratorium marches, and in October and November of 69, one of those marches coming down Pennsylvania Avenue with 500,000 of my fellow Americans, as we were marching past the old FBI building, somebody looked up and pointed to one of the upper windows, and there, scowling down at us as we marched by, was old J. Edgar Hoover. So we all flipped him off as we went merrily by.
What, you could tell because of the calico frock, or what?
Well, he was awarded in his youth the Golden Gloves, and they were gold lame, and they came all the way up to here.
Wait a minute. Just about. Wait a minute. You had to work too hard not to get a cowbell for that.
Elbow length, if you will.
Opera length. Opera length, damn it.
Opera length, yeah. And the lovely lines of that gown. It's stupendous. It's tremendous. It's lovely.
Don't forget the ruby slippers.
Oh, God. I could use a pair of ruby slippers at this point. Get me the hell out of here, Glenda the Good Witch. But anyway, I'll post the...
Well, link. What did you do with Punky? Punky is not... Yeah. Punky's very quiet this evening.
Well, see, I kind of primed him for this because I was on the phone earlier this afternoon to the personal representative of the president of AT&T. I had written him an email the other day, frustrated about having this new streaming TV service, DirecTV Now, that supposedly was going to be the answer for all the cord cutters out there. In other words, you would get 100 channels for $35 a month, and it would stream right to your TV or to your streaming media box or to your iPhone or however you wanted to do it. Well, in theory, it's a splendid idea, but they launched the damn thing without getting all the bugs out of it. So I've had this damn thing a month, and there were about a dozen TCM movies, classics, that I wanted to watch. And you'd get a few minutes in, and then the thing would stop playing. And there's no rewind, so you've got to start it up again and watch it all again until it stops playing. And out of like a dozen movies, one I was able to watch without any problem. So I said, screw this. I'll go straight to the top and talk to the chief guy in charge. So this lady called me back and she said, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are still some bugs. We're working feverishly, you know, dot, dot, dot to resolve it. But I'm prepaid for 3 months so I could get the free Apple TV box. But if there's not considerable improvement by March.
Okay, so I'm glad to know I'm not the only one.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I signed on. I bit the bullet and signed up for DirecTV Now.
Okay. What has your experience been?
It works some of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're cruising along. Okay, so it was bedtime last night. And I'm on my first 7 days of the free trial trying to decide if I'm going to keep it or not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, oh, look, HBO, and they're showing it. And in this age, it feels kind of dumb to say, oh, I'm going to stop everything and watch this because that's what they're showing right now. That feels so 20th century.
Yeah.
But it was the Blues Brothers, and it was at the beginning. And it's been a long time since I watched the Blues Brothers from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Well, I watched the Blues Brothers from the beginning and, you know, the wonderful production numbers, you know, John Lee Hooker's in there and the Aretha Franklin production number and the Ray Charles production number and the tremendous scene at Bob's Country Bunker. And so I'm watching, and then it appears we're having some problems.
Damn right, Skippy.
And I'd invested a rock solid 67 minutes in it so far.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, you fuckers.
So you missed the Cab Calloway performance at the benefit show.
No. I got Minnie the Moocher. I got Minnie the Moocher.
Okay.
I'm trying. Let's see. I got John Candy ordering orange whips for the cops. But yeah, it died out somewhere there about, and I had forgotten about Carrie Fisher being in that film.
Oh yeah.
With the RPGs.
Oh, that was great. That was great. But Hell half you off, were you're like woman scorned, you know,
Bob, you and I both have been victims of the dreaded QP1502 error code. We were having problems.
No, I was told to go to their help thread, which I have no idea where it is, and look up QC30.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me see what QC30 is, because I've gotten that one too, but the one that I get the most is the QP1502.
And by the way, while we're at it, I don't know who's in charge of the listings, but they need to be taken out and given a thorough stomping. Because when you tell me that I've got that there are four back-to-back episodes of Green Acres coming on, I want to see Oliver goddamn Wendell Douglas. You understand me?
Oh, of course.
Not the fucking Golden Girls. As much as I love Betty White and Rue McClanahan and B. Arthur. When, you know, it's like biting into a chocolate sundae and it's actually broccoli casserole. I love broccoli casserole. But if my taste buds are sitting there warming up to sing a fucking aria for a hot fudge sundae, broccoli casserole ain't, I mean, it, you cannot begin to express the wrongness of that.
Oh, of course. And that is basically the feeling that I've gotten when this issue crops up, as it has multiple times in the last month. And, you know, it is such a good idea, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I said, well, it's about damn time.
Yeah.
And the cable companies must be just having a shit hemorrhage.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, this is the kind of thing that kills cable. That, I mean, theoretically, this is a cable TV killer.
Well, it is, because one of the things that really sold me on the idea was the fact that in this particular introductory package, 100 channels for $35, and you're locked in at that price, theoretically, if you don't cancel, as long as you have it until they decide to bump the price up, okay? But the idea that these are channels, most of which I would actually watch, compared to the usual cable lineup, which is the same, you know, 75 channels that you'd probably want
32
to watch.
Of which are either Home Shopping or Electric Jesus.
Right. But then there's another 75 or 100 more that in the whole time you've ever had cable, you've never stopped long enough to look at them, because you know that it's just bullshit programming or infomercials late at night when I'm usually watching. But anyway, hopefully, I mean, I'll take the lady at her word that they are working on it and that it will be resolved.
Well, I hope they do, because, you know, I'm also down for some $5 HBO, too.
Well, and see, that's the other thing. I thought about switching from the current HBO system that I've got on UVerse. I kept the basic local channels plus HBO. And I said, well, $5 a month for HBO is a hell of a lot less than $16 a month for HBO. But something told me, no, hold off on that, because if this thing turns out to be really buggy, which it is so far, you don't want to lose HBO, even for a $5 cost versus $16, you know, a month. But I think they'll get it straightened out. I mean, I wanted
some access to, you know, news. And I sat, you know, after the Blues Brothers, you know, went kaput, and I went cruising around a little bit. And so I stopped on the BBC. When did the BBC turn into when did their news broadcast turn into the go all stupid and vapid? Because I was watching, you know, around midnight last night, whatever, and it was every bit as dippy as watching any other American channel, except with slightly more interesting pronunciation and a few more and stories from a few other places on the planet. You know, they brought this guy on who does weather and business news, and he was all sort of hypey and confrontational, and I'm like, what is this?
Bob, I think I know the answer to that. There's a BBC International, which we don't get in the U.S. anymore, and there's a regular BBC America. The BBC America, I think, is the dumbed-down version of it.
Well, let me look at the lineup. I'm pretty sure that both of those are on this package of channels.
If I could just say something about AT&T, I have a regular DirecTV, and I knew when AT&T took over, you know, bought DirecTV, that the service was going to become crappy, because that's what AT&T does, you know? They have the oldest equipment imaginable. They
AT&T,
don't
make we make things suck.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's a big, you know, the bigger it is, the worse service you get. So, I mean, so far, I'm not dissatisfied with DirecTV, but, you know, it sounds like they, you know, they're overreaching here with the DirecTV now, because they, you know, it wasn't ready for the rollout, you know, but they did it anyway, you know?
Well, here's the thing, Rick and Bob, they carry BBC America and BBC World News, okay? But the other thing that really sold me on this was the fact that if you use the DirecTV Now app on your iPhone or your Android, as long as you have AT&T phone service, when you're out and about, you can fire that thing up, and it doesn't count against your monthly data.
Right, which drives the net neutrality folks, and I understand why, absolutely up a tree.
Yeah, well,
because you're prioritizing it. Content.
We're going to lose net neutrality in the new administration, unfortunately.
I think that's probably true. Because AT&T is kind of late to the game on that, because Verizon's had a deal with the NFL for a while now, and they're working on a deal with Netflix along the same lines, that it doesn't count against your bandwidth.
Mm. Well, are they going to send you the Apple TV box?
No, I didn't opt for it.
Because another trick that I found, having an iPhone and now the Apple TV box, for some reason the DirecTV Now app on the iPhone is somewhat more stable than the one on the Apple TV box. But if you fire it up on the phone and use the Apple AirPlay feature, you can send the content to the box, which shows it on the TV, which is pretty nifty. But anyway, this is getting
kind of
little...
makes you know, when we can do all these things, it kind of makes you wonder why we don't still have a manned space program. Because if we can do this, I think we can go back to the moon.
Do you want to hear about my new TV?
Oh, do please.
It's an Insignia Roku 55-inch. And the only problem I had with it was hooking my soundbar to it. I played hell trying to get that thing to work. And then I changed and went to the optical cord instead of like RCA jacks.
And everything got better?
Well, I hit the scan on my soundbar and poof, it popped up.
About blew you out the back wall?
No, I didn't have it turned that high.
Oh, see, you're a smart one.
But it can play.
Well, that is going to be my next adventure, is getting it on the on my regular TV, this DirecTV Now. So I hadn't even thought about the Apple AirPlay. Maybe I need to go back and get the Apple TV box. It's just, I read the reviews and. It is what it is.
Well,
I've been streaming a lot of stuff now from Netflix on that 55-inch. Somebody mentioned Hell on Wheels.
Yeah.
Or.
Oh yeah, on AMC.
Yeah,
that's a great show.
Well, it's on. You can stream it on Netflix. I'm on the third season.
Keep watching. It's got great character development.
Oh, the characters in this. I mean, it's got some nasty.
You guys have convinced me. I'm going to start that this weekend.
Oh, Bob, definitely.
That's right up your alley, Bob. It's a historical drama. You'll love it. And it's actually accurate for the most part, I think.
Well, go ahead, Spark.
Inserts of history in it is kind of cool. I mean,
yeah.
You got fighting the Indians and. And you got deal with Mormons.
You got the railroad. You've got the Asian immigrant workers.
You got the mad Norwegian.
Oh yeah, and the Irish railroad workers and the black. Oh, it's a great. And because it's all tied into the railroads, which were the big business, the mega businesses of that era. It's almost like looking at the modern world, but none of these characters have, you know, internet
iPhones.
Devices. Yeah, yeah. iPhones.
Hey, guys, I think Agnes is pulling up. I need to go and make sure everything's okay. So talk amongst yourselves for a couple minutes. I'll be right back. Stand by. Or don't stand by. Talk.
Okay, I've got a question about the Roku TV. I've had the box for several years and just love it. How is the TV where it's all built in?
Oh, it's easy. It's just you go to the store. You can go to and buy the free stuff, or you can buy stuff. And I don't want to buy stuff, so I just get loaded free stuff on it. Like Crackle.
But it's a good TV in terms of picture quality and
Oh yeah, it's 4K.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, it's really good. I mean, I had to redo the last couple seasons of Breaking Bad just to watch it on that.
That's a great show.
Device 1, disconnected. Sonic Rider, not connected.
Uh-oh. Charlie.
Is that me? Is my windstream petering out again?
No, that's Charles.
Okay.
Hello?
In Tennessean. Oh, that? You were making some noises there.
It was
I just disconnected from the Bluetooth in my car. I got back to the apartment.
Happens. Oh, speaking of cars, I'm driving my Volt. I'm enjoying that.
Nice.
I actually
you got a Volt?
Yeah, I got a Volt. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I figured I'd better because the federal tax credit is probably going to go bye-bye after this year with the Trumpster becoming president.
You know it will.
Yeah, so I bought it Christmas Eve day, and it's like a $7,500 federal rebate, which will help, and then the state offers a $2,500 rebate. And I didn't know this, but the thing about the Volt is you can power it. You can either charge it or drive it with gasoline, one of the two, but it doesn't have an internal combustion engine. It somehow processes, you know, the gasoline and transfers it directly into electrical power somehow. So I'm not exactly sure how that works, but maybe Snark would know.
It's got to burn it somehow.
Well, I'm sure it does burn it somehow, but, you know, it doesn't have a gasoline engine, though.
It might use a fuel cell. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah. At least that's what my son told me. My son told me it has a range. No, it's out. It's 2017. It has a range of 54 miles on the electrical vehicle charge, and if you add like it has like a 8.5-9 gallon gas tank, and that gets you like another maybe 300 miles in addition to the 53. So if you charge it every day when you finish driving it, you know, it works quite well. It takes about 12 hours to charge, though. That's the only problem with it. But it's much better than the old Volt, which was strictly electrical. And so if you had a commute, you had to maneuver, it wouldn't work very well for you because it only had a range of maybe, you know, 40 miles on electrical power. And that's all it had.
Yeah, those were the really early ones.
Yeah.
The last few years, they've had a range of about 300 miles mixing between electric and gas.
Yeah. So does it have an internal combustion engine or not?
Yeah, it looks like it's ICE. Let me get a...
So do you have an electric vehicle charging station at work?
No, I don't. But there is a Tesla charging station maybe just a few miles away. If I get in a pinch, I could always go there and charge it there, I suppose, you know?
I wouldn't think so. Are the charging hookups the same?
Yeah, that's the thing that, you know, I tried to charge it at a movie theater after I first bought it, and I couldn't figure out how it fit in, or I didn't know, or it was the wrong charger. I think it was the wrong charger, you know.
But you got something at home that works, right?
Yeah, I just plug it in. Yeah, they didn't give me a charging cable at first. It was like it should have been in the car, but wasn't. And so the sales guy drove up from like the dealership, like some 30 miles away or more, and delivered it to me like a week after I bought it. You know, because I obviously wanted to be able to use the electrical vehicle feature of it, you know. But it's a nice little car, you know, and it gives you feedback so you can try to conserve the charge as much as possible, you know. So I've kind of scaled back my 80-mile-an-hour driving down to maybe 75 miles an hour at the most, you know? So.
Yeah, I'm showing here that it's
how far is your commute?
32 miles each way. So it's 65 miles a day.
I'm showing here that it's a 1.5-liter four-cylinder ICE internal combustion.
Oh, it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, my son is wrong then.
There's one in the future where they wanted to go gasoline to fuel cell. I didn't think that was going to be released for a few years.
Okay, so it's 1.5 liters. So if I put in, okay, so I see it's that's the size of the
a very tiny motor,
the carburetor and so forth, or what?
No, that's how big the area.
That's the displacement.
That the cylinders sweep through.
Oh, okay. Okay, but because the gas tank's a lot bigger than that. It's just the, I guess that's the...
That's the actual combustion area, the 1.5 liter.
Gotcha, okay.
Hey, Snork.
Hello.
Which particular automobile? I'm sorry, I popped back in.
Oh, I was telling the group, Bob, that I got a Volt on Christmas Eve Day.
Awesome. In that instance, the gasoline engine runs the generator, which drives the car.
Right, exactly. But it has a, I was telling folks, it has an electrical vehicle range, if you fully charge it, of like 54 miles just on the electrical.
Oh, they've upped the range then, because the earlier models was about 35.
Yeah, it used to be they were all electric, so you didn't, you know, you couldn't go anywhere. You had to,
well,
like,
that was that was way back in the days of Who Killed the Electric Car. GM now has an all-electric vehicle coming out called the Bolt, B-O-L-T.
Yes, that's actually quite a bit more expensive, and it's. I asked them about that when I was at the dealership, and they said, no, that's not coming out till next year. So I was actually going to get a hybrid initially, and then I said, oh, you have a Volt? What's the deal with this? And it turns out that you get the federal tax rebate at $7,500 if you get, like, a Volt.
Yeah.
But that doesn't apply to hybrids like a Prius, for example, because it's not capable of running just on electrical power. And you also get a $2,500 tax credit for the state of California. You'd get that for either a Prius or a Volt or whatever you got. And so because I know that the...
isn't the idea of government incentivizing things kind of a nifty thing?
Well, you're picking winners and losers. Yeah, it is, actually.
Well,
Bob,
that's because hydrocarbons are fucking losers, right?
They are losers, and this credit, this large credit, is going to be eliminated in the 27 by the Congress this year. I'm guessing. I don't know for sure. I don't know when it expires, but let's just say when it expires, they ain't going to renew it. You know, with Drex Tillerson, or Drex, I guess you could call him Drex Tillerson, because he's Drex.
Let's consider the source. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, Bob, I got a question for you when you're ready.
I'm ready.
What, all right, in your never to be humble opinion, what would be the best way to retaliate against the Russians for sticking us with this orange monster?
I don't really know. I mean, that's kind of above my pay grade and outside my realm of expertise.
I understand,
because the thing is, vengeance. You know, remember the Bible says, "Vengeance is mine," saith the Lord. And sometimes we want to say, well, can we help?
But you don't want to get into pissing contest with the Russians.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I can understand how Ron found it kind of difficult to fathom that they would do something like this, because they got caught. They flat out got caught. Now, if you're us,
yep.
Maybe you don't tip your hand. You know, maybe something as serious as cyber warfare is something where you keep your assets as tucked away as you can, so that if the shit really does finally hit the fan, you can press the button and turn off their electricity.
Right, but you know they can do that to us too, and I really don't like sitting in the dark without heating or plumbing or any of that crap. You know?
Well, we don't know that they can do that to us.
Oh, we hope not. But okay, here's my answer, and this is a pie in the sky answer. It's never going to happen. If there was ever a reason for a mulligan on an election, this is it. They wanted Trump. You know, if we could do a mulligan, have Barack stand there another year, put two different candidates in there, start over, put ourselves in a bubble, do all paper ballots, keep them out of it. That would really chap their ass better than anything.
Yeah, but there's a problem with that, Steve. Everybody, I mean, look, I don't like what's happening any more than the next guy, and I'm damn sure not going to normalize it, and I'm going to resist, and I'm not going to collaborate. But you cannot get around the fact that there were some 60 million people, 25% of the electorate, who voted for Donald Trump and the Russians had nothing to do with their decision.
I hear that, Bob, but there's some situations that 0.1% changed the way that this thing fell. Now, who's to say? I mean, we can't go backwards, and we will never know. But who's to say, but for the Russians, we wouldn't be stuck with this orange bastard?
Well,
you know?
I tend to, you know, like Matt Taibbi, I find the stories believable. And you know, my personal conviction is that Trump is so deeply in hock to Russian bank oligarchs that they can play him like a cheap fiddle. Are you gonna tell me? And I'm not trying to be argumentative here.
No, I understand.
But are you going to tell me that if we have a mulligan, that suddenly all the precious sparkle ponies in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania are going to rethink the stupidity of their Jill Stein votes?
No, they're just going to dig in even harder, and we're still going to wind up with the Republican tool.
You're going to wind up with Trump.
Right, but I'm saying take him out of it, you know. Well,
how do you do that? The Republican Party struggled mightily trying not to let him be the nominee.
But it's like Pavlov's dog. If we keep letting them get their way, they're going to keep doing this shit to us every 4 years, and we're never going to climb out of this mess.
Because empires never gently retire. They have to crumble and fall, Steve.
And that Holman rule is very disturbing. I just posted a link to it, and I don't think there's any coincidence that they tried to get rid of the ethics committee on day one. These fuckers know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Well, there is a silver lining in all this, Steve, and it's prefaced with a question. For the next 4 years, or at least with the presidency, the next 4 years, and then with the Congress, in terms of the House, the next 2 years, can we survive it that long, regardless of what they do or don't do? Okay, so there's that part of it. But the other part of it is, it's that old thing, give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. In a way, if you're able to say, so what, if they fuck it up to a fare thee well, as much as they're allowed to, that only serves to show what complete boobs and incompetence they are. And maybe this time it'll be the magic tipping point where people will say, enough, we will never let these assholes be in charge ever again, or at least not for a while.
Wasn't that what the Bush administration was supposed to do?
Well, yeah, and I was funny that you should mention that. In 2004, when it was Bush versus Kerry, I thought, well, maybe the people will have found that they've had enough, but it turns out they didn't. And even in 2008...
Well, 2004 got stolen just like 2000 did. I mean, 2004 was, yeah. 2000 was stolen in Florida, and 2004
absolutely.
Was stolen in Ohio.
Yeah, but when I say the people have had enough, it's that continual learning curve where the thing becomes cumulative to the point where people say, there's something wrong with the way we've been doing it. We've got to go a different way. And you're right. Obama was primed at the start of 2009, and he had a massive support behind him. But the problem was there were enough of these obstructionist GOP assholes who would fight him at every possible turn.
And don't forget, people stayed home in 2010. because that's right. they were
hurt. Exactly.
He could do everything they wanted him to do.
Right. The special snowflakes stayed home, and the special snowflakes stayed home this time through too.
Yeah, the Tea Party resurgence in 2010 was the beginning of the end of the Obama, administration in terms of getting anything done. Nothing happened after, that Congress was sworn in. Not much happened, let's say. So he had a very narrow window of time, and I think he spent too much time trying to get Republican support for the health care deal. He should have just ramrodded it through in a couple of months and then gone on to the next thing. He wasted too much time on health care. He wasted a year just on health care, and so he couldn't get any other initiatives done.
No, he wasted too much time trying to be bipartisan.
He did, absolutely.
Trying to work with these assholes whose main objective was to make sure he was a one-term president. They didn't give a flying fuck about anything but fucking with the Negro. So he wasted too much time. I mean, his presidency, if not a prime example of the racism and the hate in this country, I don't know what else is. I mean,
Tracy. He should have came out kicking and screaming much sooner.
My beautiful dream of him was him rolling into Congress with a gat, a Newport hanging from his mouth, and an OE, and say, "What the fuck? Let's get this shit done." That I wanted him to be the angry black man, because they already thought he was. So why not play up to it and just kick ass? But he wanted to be, the noble Negro. I understand that, because you didn't want to scare the white people too much, because then in 2012 he wouldn't have been reelected. But in 2012, when he was reelected in 2012, he's a lame duck president. Fuck trying to be cool with these people and just, I'm the head nigga in charge. What, bitches?
Okay. Yeah, should have blew the lid off of this thing.
Well, here's a classic case in point. I'm looking at now this was published over at Raw Story, so I don't know who writes the headlines for whom, but the story itself comes from Reuters. And the headline at Raw Story says, "Obama says Sanders supporters helped undermine Obamacare." And I read that and I went, what? So because I'm naturally skeptical and because I don't just accept things that are handed to me, I read the damn thing. I read the Reuters article. And it references the Vox town hall event that Obama participated in. And what he said was not what the headline says. I mean, this is the kind of disinformation that leads to problems. So during the event, the text of the story says, "Obama also said liberals like former Democratic presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders had contributed to the program's unpopularity." Okay, here's the actual quote from Barack Obama, though. "In the dissatisfied column are a whole bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters who wanted a single-payer plan. The problem is not that they think Obamacare is a failure. The problem is that they don't think it went far enough and that it left too many people still uncovered." Which is a far cry from saying Bernie Sanders supporters undermined Obamacare. That's not the same thing. It's not even in the same county. Because I got a feeling that if you ask Barack Obama directly, he'd say, "I want there not to be an uninsured person in the United States." Which is the same thing Bernie is saying. But this will be used as another means of saying, it's Bernie's fault.
Well, Scott in California brought up an excellent point a couple of days ago on another show. He said, "How do we know that the Russians didn't blackmail Comey into coming out and saying that crap that he did, that I got something more I'm going to release? How do we know that didn't happen?" We don't.
No, and the other thing we have is that direct quote from Trump this summer telling the Russians to hack into Hillary's email.
I mean, it's right there.
That's not, you know, that's not code. That's not saying the one-eyed possum stalks at midnight. And that means in Russia, hack Hillary's emails. He said, maybe the Russians will hack Hillary's emails. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
But we were all mad as hell as Comey, me included, you included, Bob. How do we know that the Russians didn't have something on him?
They could.
And, we can't. This is all that Donald Rumsfeld known unknowns territory, and it will drive you batshit crazy if you play with it long enough.
How do we get back at him? Unless we got pictures of Putin in bed with chickens or something. I mean, and totally humiliate this guy. I don't know of any way we could really get back at him without getting in a pissing contest that we may regret that we started.
He's a tin-pot autocratic goddamn dictator who's looting his own country. If you hit him in the wallet, he'll know it, and it will hurt.
But that's the thing, Bob.
I suggested that a couple of weeks ago.
Trump's not going to do that.
After I saw
he needs Congress to go along.
But look who his Secretary of Energy is. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir.
He needs Congress's help in getting rid of the sanctions against Russia. I don't think he can just unilaterally waive them. I mean, maybe there's some sort of national security exception in there. I don't know, but, you know.
Well, Trump is going to find out a lot of things he can't do just by wanting to do it.
Well, okay, like him saying he would impose a big border tax on Toyota.
And see, the Republicans have never, when given the opportunity, they have never backed down from doing what they do best, okay, and that is to fuck things up. And I get what Tracy was saying about, you know, she wanted for Obama to come in January 2009 as the angry black man, because a lot of people perceived him that way to begin with. He didn't have to be the angry black man. All he had to do was be the learned black man that he is, with all the support that he had to get him where we got him in 08.
Scott, all he really had to do was be the guy who didn't lose his congressional majority in 10.
And part of that is leading in such a way that you make it abundantly clear to everybody watching that I am the fucking president. And I know what the people were saying when they put me here. Now let's get down to work.
And he should have blown the whistle against the Russians when he knew it was happening pre-election, instead of waiting after the election and come out and say, well, I wanted a fair election. Bullshit. When you see something like that going down, you raise hell then and there. You don't keep that close to your chest.
I mean,
that was a lame excuse that he gave. Well, yep. I didn't want to make it look like I was favoring one candidate over another. That's bullshit.
What the fuck? You're a Democrat. Well,
Wait. Cowbell to Tracy.
What did she say? What did you say, Tracy?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Yeah.
You're the fucking Democratic president of the United goddamn state of America. Yes, you're supposed to favor one candidate over the other, motherfucking goddamn shit.
Because you're out there campaigning for her.
Right, that's why I should have raised hell. He knew this shit was going on.
There were reports as early as, like, say, July in Time magazine that private security consultants had determined that a guy named Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear, with Russian origins, had been hacking into, you know, the Democratic National Committee and, you know, creating problems. And at that point, that's when Obama should have come out and, you know, called him on the carpet.
Hey, guys, let me interrupt for a minute, please, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Because we are 2.5 hours into the program, and I would really, really like for us to at least get through the first week of January without getting in a hole. And we've got, I neglected to count Tracy earlier this evening, but we've got $275 to raise this evening.
WTF, seriously?
Yeah. Because you met your own match. So the other 25 bucks had already been factored. I factored this in, so that takes us to 275 bucks. And I'll just say this, it's been a goose egg tonight, not a penny, not a sausage. And so that, you know, that would mean going into Moran Monday at 475, and that can quickly become 675 Tuesday, 875 Wednesday, and, you know, then, you know, my liver starts quivering. So, okay. Anybody, and that's not, Tracy, that wasn't aimed at you. That was acknowledging what you had already done. And people do a lot to keep this on the air. But, you know, if, it, you know, and I'm looking down the road as part of the resistance. You know, if we bring more people into the conversation, if we get more people participating, then that makes it possible for, you know, us to be what we need to be, you know, a safe haven for people to come and talk during the upcoming shit hurricane.
Occupation. Well, like I was screaming about that, you know, how you, what is, you got to say it right, because, see, I don't do it as well as you do about, you know, him knowing what was going on with the election as early as somebody just said fucking July. Go ahead and say it, Bob. Jesus, Barack. Come on. Do it for me.
Oh, well, yeah, because we're going to have to close the cabinet-level position of Secretary of Jesus, Barack, here in another 14 days.
And bring in the guy that says, you can't do that, Donald.
I thought you were going to say president, not sure, for a second there, Bob.
All of this still doesn't add up to me. I don't know that WikiLeaks wasn't a government organization, but not the KGB, that it sure sounds like a cover story when they say the CIA found it, or the CIA is the one that's talking about this data, when that's not their charge. I'd like to hear from it from one of the two organizations that is charged with monitoring the data, or monitoring hacking and stuff. Why aren't they speaking up?
But isn't it all a scary world that we're actually rooting for the CIA?
Again, like I said, CIA, it's not them. Why is the CIA commenting?
Well, Ron's not in the room anymore, but he has pointed out repeatedly that there's only one agency that can do this. And it ain't the CIA, and it ain't the FBI.
There's two others.
Well, Ron says one.
But Homeland and NSA, what?
Well,
NSA,
probably. Yeah, NSA.
There's another one that's stronger than the NSA.
Hmm.
When in the 70s, when the space shuttle system was going to be canceled, the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Organization, basically said, keep NASA, we'll fund it. Just give us 25% of your flights. They have the amount of money on hand without a blink of an eye, without needing anybody's signature, to say that they would take over funding NASA. That's an incredible amount of money for an organization to do, manipulate what they want. And they are so bold that one of their satellite launches, they put their motto on the side of the satellite, total information awareness. I would like to hear from one of these organizations who should have all of the transmissions through the internet of all of Hillary's emails. Okay, well, we're paying this money for these organizations. Why aren't they coming to the plate and telling us what really happened?
What does NRO stand for? Remind me.
National Reconnaissance Organization.
Okay, yeah, all right.
And again, there's their motto, total information awareness. What does that tell you about what they listen to? And for that one launch, their logo for that launch was an octopus over the world gathering information.
Actually, well, I've seen that logo. In fact, Reverbo sent it to me on a button he made once.
NRO then is the modern technological equivalent of what J. Edgar Hoover did as head of the FBI, having dirt on everybody.
Yes.
I mean, why don't they? What's the answer? Why don't they step up? Is it to not tip their hand, or?
Now, as far as the NSA is concerned, why did they even let Hillary have her own server? Why did it get to that point?
Well, I think that's one of the problems is nobody knew. She just did it.
No. If they didn't know, they shouldn't be in existence. That was their job to know what each of these persons are, people in these.
God Almighty, Snork. I mean, we've got computers that are still running on seven and a half inch floppy disks. Okay, I mean, I think we tend to overestimate to a certain extent the concentration of our computer talent.
Yeah, but there is field deployment equipment, and there is frontline equipment. Now, Hillary was in a position that it was at a high risk of being hacked. They knew that she was using cell phones. They came in and they'd tell her that she couldn't use them. They knew that she was trying to use other devices, and they told her she couldn't use them. There's no way they did not know that she was using a bad server, and either they were planting false information on it or something else was going on, that the whole story does not add up, that the NSA did not intervene with Hillary having a server.
Hey, Ron, I saw you blinking there a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds ago. You got something to add?
Not really. A couple of things I could add, but I'd get in deep trouble because I'd be violating an oath. The NRO, all I can say is publicly, the NRO is, their motto is above and beyond. They are satellite oriented. And the opportunity to intercept ground-based communications, i.e. stuff that travels over the internet and does not touch satellites, is somewhat limited. They can do it, particularly transmissions between microwave towers. But as far as getting down into the weeds, the organization is best equipped to do that. And we know they would never do that because they're not allowed to work on U.S. soil, would be the NSA. As to why they're not coming fully open, if they do, it would reveal methods and technologies. And those things are not really... That's not really information you want to let into the hands of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and all the other conspiracy theorists, including the ones that are convinced that the NRO is the end-all and be-all. They have a superb set of capabilities in the NRO. They can target satellites, move them, focus them on hotspots, and then concentrate them there, but they're not the end-all and be-all. The whole intelligence picture is a raft of information coming from multiple sources, all in real time, and it all gets pulled together in Washington.
And it's kind of like the board in Russell Crowe's garage in A Beautiful Mind. You know, the one with clippings from Highlights for Children and Reader's Digest and Ladies' Home Journal and Field and Stream.
Well, that thing about the NSA not being permitted on domestic soil to do certain things, I must say that back in the 90s, and I'm talking about the early 90s, the public became aware or was made aware of an agreement between agencies like the NSA and European countries' counterpart agencies, where if there was somebody we wanted to know about in our country, but we weren't allowed to look in on them.
No, you're talking about Echelon. Yeah.
Echelon, yeah, the reciprocal agreement that the Brits could look in where we couldn't, and we'd return the favor when the shoe was on the other foot.
And when neither could, and when neither could do it, the Australians would.
Does anybody know who the members of Echelon are?
Oh, it's the U.S., Great Britain, Canada, Australia. Who else?
France.
Is that it?
Yep.
Well, and I bring that up, Echelon, to pose the question, where is Russia in terms of capability compared to what we had even back way in, you know, 20 years ago in the early 90s, 25 years ago now?
This is the point where everybody expects me to jump in, and I won't.
Well,
right.
No, it was more rhetorical, but from what we know that we know, to be Rumsfeldian here for a moment, okay, certainly we have some sense, someone has some sense of where Russia stands in their capability, what they can do and what they can't do. And certainly
I suspect that we know more, and this is nothing but suspicion, and I'm no Intel community fanboy. But I suspect if we've got any brains at all, and again, that's positing a theorem that is not necessarily proven, that we've got better sense than to let the world know what we know, or let the Russians know what we know.
Yeah, and that may go to answer your original question, Bob. You know, why don't we hit them in a way that they will unmistakably feel it? Well, if we do, then that tips our hand, and they know what we're capable of.
You know, on the other hand, if Pootie Poot wakes up tomorrow and it hurts when he pees, and he and his personal doctor tells him that he's got Clamaherpagonosyphilides, well, you know, that's a horse's head in the bed, isn't it?
Yeah,
oh, can I not get a fucking cowbell recognition for Clamaherpagonosyphilides?
I think you should.
Thank you.
Yes, give yourself one, Bobby.
Well, in other words, there are other ways to skin the proverbial cat, I guess is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, look.
I'll say is Pappy prohibits me from taking on long words like that.
I understand. I had to practice before airtime.
And then do you know what his doctor said after that?
What?
Vladimir, we do not have to cut this off. In 10 minutes, it'll fall off all by itself.
Wait a minute.
There you go.
Yeah, that would be, and his personal physician is Dr. Rachakakoff, isn't it?
Exactly. It's big have you had this before? Yeah, well, you've got it again. Only worse.
That cowbell is becoming too ubiquitous, Bob. It's got to be saved for the special occasion.
Well, no, that was a troika right there is what that
was. Okay, that was true. Yes, that's true.
Whatever happened to the old line about Doc says you're going to die? Meh.
Yeah.
I actually awarded Randy Rhodes a toaster on her show today. I called in, and she came up with this great line referring to Trump and George W. Bush as a critical mass of idiocy. I like that. Thought that was pretty cool. About how they're both going to be at the inauguration and so forth, you know? Anyway, that's all.
Oh, and thank you very much to Jack in Shreveport. The fundraising goal just dropped to $325, so thank you, Jack. Thank you very, very kindly.
Speaking of Louisiana, have we heard from Jim down there lately? Because
it's been a while.
I was worrying about him the other day, and I'm hoping that he's all right.
Well, you know, it's been a long time since we've heard from from Jim nearer to here, too. So we have multiple Jims to worry about. But no, I haven't. Oh, thank you, Charlie. Thank you very kindly. We're now down to 300 to go. So, 200 to go. 200 to go. So that is very, very helpful indeed. That would just be tonight's fundraising goal, $200. No, in short order, no, we haven't.
Bob?
Yes, Rick.
I'd like to start a chavalanche.
Oh, a matchalanche.
A matchalanche, that's right, a matchalanche. I'll throw in 25 and throw in another 25 once that's matched. So it'll be a total of 50 if.
Okay, so that's true. That yeah, that's the beginning of a true match-a-lanch. That means we need six other people to follow and re-challenge and follow and re-challenge and follow and re-challenge. And then at the end of it all, you'll kick the final $25 in, making a true match-a-lanch. Thank you, Rick. Thank you very kindly.
Sure.
I had a note in, going back to our discussion of automotive automobiles, Michael in Madison said, I have owned a 2013 Ford C-Max for about 9 months now. It's the Ford equivalent of a Prius. It's a hybrid, but it is capable of making short trips off the highway without burning any gasoline. ICE is completely silent, i.e. not running at all. I couldn't afford to buy a new car, even with tax credits, which is why I didn't opt for the more expensive plug-in hybrids. I think that's what the new Volts are, like what Rick has, plug-in hybrids. That's exactly what they are. They tend to have better electric range, and of course, you can charge them by plugging them in rather than strictly relying on the ICE. Although, to be accurate, it's not just the ICE that charges the battery. It also uses regenerative braking. That's true, too. When I come to a stoplight stop sign, a score, i.e. 92%, appears on my dash to tell me how well I did. Coming to a stop not too abruptly but not too slowly captures the most energy, which then charges the battery. I imagine Rick's Volt may also have that technology. The third category is, of course, all electric plug-in only. I will say this, says Michael, my miles per gallon have dropped dramatically in this bitterly cold Wisconsin weather because the ice kicks in to heat the damn car. So I rarely ever kick into EV mode. It's like I have a regular fucking car lately. I hadn't considered that. Probably not a concern in California, but just another reason I despise winter. Why, oh, why did I move to Wisconsin? Signed, Michael. Answer, because beer.
There's room for you out here in California, Mike.
And even beer.
But watch out for the rain.
In San Diego.
We had frozen ponds this morning.
Rain, schmain, that's nothing. That's easy compared to the Midwest, you know?
One thing that bothers me about these hybrid cars is basically you get pollution from the, when you discard the batteries, you get a tremendous amount of pollution. And also to charge them, if you're using a charging station, the electricity has to be generated somehow, and it's more than likely not going to be generated by solar.
Well, that's true. I mean, there and we've tried. Hey, Charlie, thanks again. You know, parts of the country, your plug-in hybrid is going to be fueled by coal-fired electricity or frack gas-fired electricity. That's more true in some places than others. But, you know, one of the things we don't even necessarily consider is that, you know, the entire state of California, some pockets of it have tried to get away from coal-fired electricity. But on the whole, the entire state of California, it's like 35, 40, maybe even 50% is still coal-fired.
Yes, that's true, Bob. And there's a major plant out, I think, in
where?
Western Arizona, or is it Eastern Arizona, that powers most of
Southern yeah, and coal Arizona. And coal from Navajo land, is a real nightmare, just an environmental justice nightmare. The coal comes from there that runs that plant.
And if you've got a hydrogen powered car, I mean, you've got a couple of choices to make hydrogen: the electrolysis of water, or passing superheated steam over carbon rods, and you've got to superheat the steam with energy.
Well, I think ultimately the goal, Bob, is for me to get solar panels on my house and, you know, be a net producer as opposed to a consumer of electricity.
Oh, I think that's a real big goal. And you know what? One of these days, because, you know, the technology, and Snort can probably speak to this, but solar technology keeps expanding, becoming cheaper, and becoming smaller. And one of these days, these cars are going to have solar cells on them. I mean, if you look at a car, that's a hell of a lot of wasted real estate there that could be gathering solar energy, isn't it?
Well, at least while they're parked. Well, the main problem with solar powering a car while it's moving is the same problem you have with the solar powered roads. You lose so much efficiency from the solar not having it angled at the sun. You also lose energy if you try to angle the solar to the sun. The extra weight that gets put on the vehicle and the loss of aerodynamics that cause the drag and just, you know, use the power. It's probably best. My favorite would be to, if I had something like the Volt, would be to have six solar panels in the trunk that I pull out and unfold when I parked. And the odds are that if most of the time you're traveling, you're not traveling all day, that you could be. And not every day you can do that. Maybe you could in sunny California. You definitely could not, trust your life to just running, charging it while you're out here. But again, also with the rechargeable batteries, the lithium ion batteries, we can't get enough. They are not going into dumps. This is not lead acid batteries that.
I was going to ask that question, Snork, because I mean, the last time I checked, the cost to replace the lithium ion battery in, say, a Volt is terrifyingly large.
About $3,500.
No, that's the Prius. On the Volt, it's a lot more, or it was 2 years ago.
I'll check because I was thinking of getting one too, and I looked, and there was a what they call a core charge, where you pay, I mean, the total cost of the battery is one, but you, just like trading in your car, you turn in your dead battery, and it's worth a lot.
if you had
to replace your battery, it'd be very expensive.
That leads to
but
my
if
next
you're
question.
Just oh, updating it, it's a different cost.
Hey, by the way, thanks, Randy. Randy just answered both ends of your challenge, Rick, and has passed it on. Thank you, Fab, for jumping in. We are now down to $125 to go.
Hot right. Damn.
So,
way to go.
Yeah, that's a really, really, really big deal. So maybe we can knock this out. Well, Snork, let me ask this, because I don't know about the componentry of a lithium ion battery, especially not something as big as the one in a Volt or a Prius.
Can you
rehabilitate the lithium once what is it about the battery that goes bad?
Well, as little fingers of metal grow in places they're not supposed to in the side of the battery, you want it to be back in nice little clean plates. And as the metal comes in and out of the electrolyte, it loses its shape. So it basically has to be reformed to be optimized, and you pretty much have to just replace it to do it.
The reason I'm asking is lithium is a rare earth element, and it's not just laying around in a lot of places. And I remember hearing Van Jones say at PowerShift in like 2009, if we do not rethink the way that we just live our lives on this planet, then it's going to be cold comfort to be fighting the next war with our electric tanks over lithium minefields.
Well, right now, especially the new thrust by some of the larger companies is to put solar or put lithium polymer batteries in everyone's homes, and that is that thought of that happening is driving the cost up of lithium ion batteries. In another 10 years, we probably will not be using lithium ion batteries for houses if another alternative comes out.
You mean the lithium Tesla ion, wall?
The one on the wall, the lithium polymer on the wall.
The Tesla wall pack?
Right. There are other options out there, but the Tesla is the most feasible now because it has the best marketing means of getting it out there. And just like with Beta and Matsushita back in the 70s, the one who's able to market is often the most successful. There are other battery chemistries out there. One battery I did a few years ago for emergencies actually used urine where you was expected that you'd have nothing else. And if it was a survival situation, you'd want to drink your water, not use it in your battery. So it was the chemist designed it to let the people have the water, and then when they're done, use it to charge a battery.
Hey, Snark, I've got one for you. Where are you when you cross the border? You're in Missouri.
No, I'm in Iowa.
No, and I'm joking.
No, I got no. I oh. Yeah.
I
even got that one.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to hang the even on that, Jules. It's not like you're humorly challenged.
And I don't know sometimes about that fire in Indiana.
Yeah, the fires, I don't get that. It's scary.
And, hey, big thanks to Labor Man. Gary just jumped in and knocked down the last of the fundraising. So we actually, the first week of January, we finished on schedule. Thank you, everybody. That is tremendous. That is huge. Thank you all so very much. You know, we've gotten through the program this evening, and I've been trying to find out if Mike Malloy is going to be live this evening. I thought we might go a little overtime because Margie is safely home, and I don't have anywhere I have to run to, but I don't want to step on Malloy if he's live this evening. But I don't know how we did it, but we managed to get through this program without talking about what happened in Fort Lauderdale. And I'm not chiding anybody. I'm talking about myself as well. But did we not mention that because it's just gotten to a place that in the United States these things just happen from time to time?
Pretty much.
Well, I had a thought about it, but I didn't bring it up simply because it reminds me of the dismal place that we seem to be in.
Diversionary tactic?
Well, when, you know, in these waning days of President Obama, when something like this would happen, as it all too frequently did during his 8 years in charge, you could count on him at least saying something intelligent and somewhat challenging when these events occurred. Under the new regime, 2 weeks away, God help us. Who the hell knows what to expect? I mean, with this asshat in charge, he'll blame it on somebody that will make him be right and look good, at least in the minds and hearts of those Trumpanzees. And I don't use that word very often, but you know, and that's what's sad about it. It's like, you know, the events are not going to stop happening simply because there's a new person in charge. It's the response from the person in charge. Like a perfect example is the governor of Florida, Skeletor. Okay, he was on TV today, and he said, standing right up, speaking right out loud in distinct, complete sentences, that he called Trump and he called Pence. He did not call the current sitting president. That should tell you a lot.
It does say something, doesn't it?
Does anybody here watch Lawrence O'Donnell?
I probably will now.
Besides me. Well, he's been sick.
I've been watching him the last month.
Did you see him explain that budget resolution the other night? How they're going to be running a $1 trillion deficit for the next 10 years?
Oh, was that when he was talking about they don't know how to put together the wording of a budget proposal?
Well, they put out the money that they're going to spend, but they haven't wrote the laws or the bills, you know, to spend the money yet. That's all a budget resolution is.
Yeah, I did see that the other night.
But he explained it because he used to be on the Senate Finance Committee as I don't know what his official title was. He was an aide to
Probably an accountant. He's probably got an accounting background. The guy is brilliant. You know? He's been a screenwriter as well, hasn't he? Wasn't he a screenwriter for The West Wing or something like that as well?
Yes.
Well, yeah, and he also, wasn't he Senator Moynihan's right-hand guy?
Protégé, I think so, Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't Moynihan run the budget committee?
Yeah, he did, I think, or the Senate Finance Committee it would have been, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the House Budget Committee and the Senate Finance, I think, is what
it is. Well, that's what he worked for that committee.
I mean, those guys, you know, the thing with Republicans is they have no idea, they have not the least idea of how to govern, put together a budget, just basic stuff that legislators are supposed to do. Just ask Bob about how, you know, the West Virginia legislature walked away without having a budget like last year, right, Bob?
Absolutely. The one job they had. And it's not that they couldn't do it. They wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
had to waste their time on worthless stuff.
Potties. Guns. Raw milk.
And killing union workers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right to work.
Cutting the coal severance tax so we can't, you know, clear roads of snow now.
Jeez.
Yeah, but I'll bet you, by God, the Senate President and the Speaker of the House, by God, I'll bet you they drive on the snow probably isn't even allowed on their driveways. A couple of notes coming in. Jenny says, I've been listening in working, so I couldn't porch it, but hugs and kisses, love to my Horn family, thanks. And Michael in Madison follows up and says, Charlie raises a good point. Ultimately, my decision to not get a plug-in was due to my personal economic situation, but I did actually consider my carbon footprint. And from the research I did, granted it was almost a year ago, I may be misremembering, I was shocked to learn that plugging in really wasn't any net gain here in Wisconsin due to where my grid power comes from. There were some parts of the country, particularly California, I think, where the situation was different due to more reliance on renewable energy. I'm learning something new about these lithium batteries, though. I just chalked those up to a necessary evil, figuring whatever gas I save would cancel out the damaging effects of the battery on the planet.
Yeah, it's really hard to know what to do, you know, as far as what's, you know, like the old thing, paper or plastic, when they used to offer that choice in supermarkets. Okay, well, what should I choose here, you know? What's the least destructive of the environment, you know?
I'd say that the lithium-ion... Okay,
now in California, you got to buy your bags or bring your own.
You do now. They changed it, but what's least? You're saying the lithium ion is the least destructive choice, or what?
Right now, yeah. Okay. And until nickel hydrogen comes out, lithium ion is the best.
And that's what's used in all of the electrical cars right now, right?
Electrical cars, drones, yeah. Okay. Lithium polymers is the version that's what they call the version that's used in the drones. Very light. But again, they recycle the lithium. They would not waste that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's a rare earth metal, so.
Well, I got corrected on that. It's actually not on the rare earth part of the periodic table. Thank you, Randy and PA.
Oh. Kind of near the surface down in Bolivia. It's kind of like oil. It's not that it'll be empty. It's that how easy it is to get to. Whereas the oil, when you're walking in Saudi Arabia, you should basically squirt in your face, versus the oil in Iowa has to be drilled miles deep under. That's why we don't see oil wells in Iowa. The oil's too deep.
And the lithium, and the lithium we talk about in batteries is the same lithium we talk about in treatment of mental illness, right?
Yeah, bipolar.
An ion's an ion.
Yeah, and as Ron can probably verify, one of the reasons that Cuban cigars are said to be so far superior to like Dominicans or Jamaicans or Hondurans or Nicaraguans or Mexican cigars is because there's a high lithium content in the Cuban soil, and so you're kind of getting a little calming dose when you go to honk on your puro as well.
Hmm.
Say what?
Or so I've been told. What? Huh? Sorry. I mellowed out for a minute.
That might explain something that I'm just now reading about in a book that my older brother sent me, JFK and the Unspeakable. I'm at the part in the book where Kennedy, unbeknownst to most people, was actually having back-channel discussions with Nikita Khrushchev, and there was a meeting of the minds in the sense that they saw that they had the ability, as the leaders of their respective nations, to blow the world up 33 times over again. And in the summer of 63, JFK gave that speech about disarmament and peace on the planet. We all breathe the same air at the American University commencement, the graduation. And he was actually, through intermediaries, working toward back-channel talks with Fidel Castro up until the day that he was killed in Dallas. Now, naturally, he had the military-industrial complex against any non-threatening noises that he was making in terms of the dreaded commie bastards, okay? And that is part of what got him killed. I don't get the sense that Trump's playing footsie with Vladimir Putin is sourced in that same intelligence and mindset that JFK was working, operating from 50-some years ago.
Hey, could I tell my bag story to Ron real quick?
Go ahead.
Instead of typing it out. Well, a couple of years ago, California, the lawmakers passed the law that they were going to outlaw the plastic bags, and everybody was panicked. And then it got changed, and they made them put it on the ballot, so everybody got to vote on. My sister thought it was real funny. She lives in Tennessee. For Christmas, she sends me a priority mailbox full of grocery bags you can buy in the store. She sent me one from Trader Joe's and some Food and Land or something else. And then when she was here in California a couple before my dad died, she had bought a couple. So I've got all the bags, and I keep them in the trunk of my car, so I got them everywhere I go. I will just take a bag into the store now.
Well, you know, we're even making progress here, Sparky. I noticed when I was over at Kroger's the other day, there's a little sign at the, and I think, I mean, I guess that's where you'd put it, but it's sort of counterproductive. The little buggy corral. There's a sign there that says, "Did you leave your reusable shopping bag in the car?" So. Even in hydrocarbon hell, we're trying to pay attention to stuff like that.
Well, I told you what I did a couple of weeks ago when this new law went into effect. 10 cents a bag at Kroger, these plastic bags. I said, fuck this. I got on Amazon and ordered a box of 500 of them. So instead of 10 cents a bag, it's like 2.5 cents a bag. And I reuse them for other stuff after I've toted the groceries home.
Well, these bags you can buy at the store, like we have Rayleigh stores up here. They last for years.
I was
reusable bags. Yeah, they got the canvas handles on them and everything.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, I use those too. But see, if I'm toting home milk. Or ground turkey or something like that, I don't want it to get all over the reusable bag, which is one of the reasons I like to have the disposable plastic bags.
Well, I have two bags just for milk. Everybody thinks I'm nuts, but my wife likes to drink milk.
Yeah.
So when I go to the grocery store, I have two totable bags that are just for the milk.
I'll tell you what, I was reminded when I had that bug last week, I was reminded just how much I love buttermilk, and I do. I just hammered the bejesus out of the buttermilk with fresh ground black pepper And it perked me right up. Ron, you were going to say something a minute ago about being reassured by the lady at Walmart or something.
Yeah, a couple of things. Walmart and Costco, 10-cent bags, we were assured in both places they were good for at least 125 trips. And the second thing is I would point out to Bob that besides the virtues of buttermilk, which I heartily endorse, drink it all the time, the next best thing is two-ply toilet paper when you have issues.
Okay.
Soft.
Have you ever had the three-ply toilet paper, y'all?
I have.
I didn't even know they made such a thing.
Oh, they do.
Three-ply toilet paper?
I had never heard of such a thing until I married Jan. Well, until Jan and I got together. And she sent me, because she had been, you know, staying with me, and she sent me to the store to get, because we're out of toilet paper. So I got the normal two-ply. And she's like, no. Yeah. Northern has three-ply.
They do.
And I would love to hear the tagline in their ads.
I mean,
Tracy, I'll tell you, over in Abu Dhabi, and it's not just in the hotel I stay in, but apparently three-ply is the norm.
Well,
inscrutable Arabs.
You know, and Ron, you know, once you've had three-ply, you know, because when I go to, you know, when we go and travel.
Oh, Tracy, you're not going to give me once you've been there, you're never going back line, are you?
Well, you know what?
Wait a minute. Wait a damn minute.
Sorry.
How about four-ply toilet paper?
I couldn't resist.
That's just folding, Rick. Now quit it.
And who makes this stuff?
Northern.
Northern. Northern.
Is that a Coke industry?
Yeah, that is a Coke company.
But Northern Quilted. It's advertised as quilted toilet paper.
You've got to figure that the tagline on the ad is something like, when you do a doo-doo and a two-ply won't do, three-ply, quilted Northern.
Well, we all know you worked it. We all know you worked in the ad writing and copywriting and continuity department at that radio station in Kansas City now, don't we?
Well,
it's softer than a virgin's eyelash. Yeah.
I did an ad at my very first station for a shoe store in this little town in southern Maryland, and I used the music, the Baja Marimba Band instrumental of "Coming Through the Back Door." Okay, yeah. And it was for the shoe store, and they wanted me to do an ad for their Hush Puppy shoes. And it was like shoes for the feet, shoes for the family, shoes for you, and shoes for me. And it was like Calvert shoes and with an excellent line of Hush Puppy shoes. Hush Puppies, the dumb shoe, you know. And even after I left the station for about a year, the guy at the shoe store would not let them change the ad because he loved that ad. I don't know, just the whimsical nature of the music and the copy. It just rubbed him the right way.
Well, we're getting some kudos from Randy in PA, who says, at least you guys are calling it toilet paper and not bathroom tissue.
Okay, I call it bathroom tissue because I just do.
Is that a cultural thing?
I remember a bit.
Well, it's always TP on my shopping list.
Well, see, I the hell with the TP thing, because that's what those are my initials. So, you know, I caught all kinds of hell when I was growing up. Hey, yo, TP, what? Yeah, bitches.
What about hockey tickets?
Kind of like my little brother's initials were GAS, gas.
Speaking of bathroom things, I remember a bit on an old Red Fox party album where he talks about the old school countrified version toward hygiene in the outhouse.
Catalog?
No, even more rural than that. You had two bushel baskets with corn cobs in them. Brown ones and white ones.
Oh.
You use a brown one, then you use a white one to see if you can.
Well, you know, the ancient Romans used a sponge on a stick that sat in running water that ran down through the middle of the privy. But, well, here we are. The show's gone to shit again. I need to send out thanks, very kind thanks to Michael and Madison and to James. Thank you very kindly for jumping in. It is a tremendous help to, you know, finish finish the first week of a new year and not be sweating bullets. That is tremendous. Devin just chimed in and says, my mother calls it shit paper. So, and you know what? When it comes right down to it, I do have an ambition. I want one of those highfalutin Japanese toilets.
I'm already shopping for one.
With the puff of warm air and the little blast of warm water. And
yeah. A bidet?
No. This is not, this is a Japanese toilet. I mean, and it just, you know, it, and then it actually goes, and then it goes, and you're just happy.
Wonders for the hemorrhoids. Is it
a bombsite toilet?
Well, have you seen the one that has like a...
You know what we call them?
For the water?
No, what?
No, the water is like kind of like when the... You know how those old school sprinklers that kind of went, you know, back and forth? Well, they kind of have a kind of a sprinkler thing going to kind of wash you from front to back. Yeah, I've been checking those out. They're like $700-$800, but, you know, once I become, you know, Dr. Tracy, I'm getting one. That's going to be my...
See, I don't feel comfortable with all that damn technology up in my business. I just, you know, because...
Well, the goddamn NSA could probably hack that.
Well, this is what I'm saying. You talk about hacking and viruses and stuff.
Well, do you remember way, way, way back in the Reign of Error when Dim Leader would travel overseas, the Secret Service was actually tasked with collecting his poo so that foreign governments... Yes. So that
what?
Foreign, yes, so that foreign,
what?
Yes, so that foreign, so that foreign governments wouldn't know all the psychoactive medications he was on.
Oh. It was a national security measure.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's true.
Now, I don't know if that was the NRO, the NSA, the DIA, the CIA, the FBI, or the
17 of them.
I think it was the poop patrol, Bob.
Well, I think they probably drew straws before every trip. Talk about getting the... Wait. Talk about getting the shit detail.
There you go.
Ah.
Wow.
Ah.
Cowbell.
Okay. We're kind of free and easy with the cowbells this evening.
Gotta handle Dim Leader's poo. Ew.
Oh, God.
Hey, on the...
Yeah, Jay Cruzen just said, an ass-wiping conversation. Very classy. Well, you know, so,
and you got to figure.
That'll bring in the donations.
The guy who is tasked with that responsibility will get to a point pretty soon where he'll say, I don't give a good goddamn what the House says. I'm not doing this for a dollar a year. You know?
Oh, are you talking about Agent Brown?
Well, you know the guy, whoever had that detail was black.
Brown can do it.
You know, he was a brother. They made the brother clean up the crap.
Tracy. You don't know that.
Come on. You know,
I love you, but come on.
No. With the affirmative action, they have to make sure they, you know,
all right.
You know, the affirmative action, we're going to give the brother the shit detail. You know.
Well, let's see. We are going to roll out of here because I understand that Malloy is live on live stream. He's just not live on Progressive Voices.
Great show, Bob. Thank you, sir.
But I want to share a note from Steve in China real quick. Subject line, too bad your best topics come in too late. I don't know about the lithium in the Cuban soil, but lithium is a calmer for sure. Prescribed typically for epilepsy, it is the only thing that ever mellowed me out. And I've been diagnosed one time or another with bipolar personality disorder or something reasonably close. But with the rise of Big Pharma's push for newer and more worthless pills, doctors are deliberately dissuaded from prescribing useful, proven medication for such conditions, even when told by the patient that a particular drug seems to be effective. I've told one psychiatrist that lithium worked for me, but got a new magic bullet instead, which proved to be a blank, something to flush down the toilet. And only because the doctor, being misinformed by the corporate jobber for new dope, had been instructed to lay off on the old pills, not profitable enough. Mental health, you see, is not such a personal issue with the corporate shills. And that is entirely true. You know, right. Because money, because capitalism, right? So we do need to get out of here. I want to thank everybody for getting us to the end of the first week of January. Okay, in terms of fundraising. Thanks, everybody, for a rousing if occasionally scatological, Friday on the front porch. Thanks for joining in, Rick and Steve from Georgistan, Scott and Punky, Charlie in Tennessee. Thanks, Jules, for being here. Thank you, Tracy, for joining in. Thanks, Ron. Give my best to Pappy Van Winkle. Thank you, Snork, for joining in. Thanks always to Sparky for moderating this this merry band of miscreants. Jay Cruzen just got in a little bit too late. I don't know if he caught the earlier portion of the program, but Jay Cruzen, it's gonna hurt you, man. It's gonna hurt you. Ron was telling us earlier that he's got a half a bottle of 15-year-old Pappy Van Winkle left. And Ron, what did you say?
Fucking awesome, dude.
There we go. But just wanted you to know that it turns out you were right about the awesomeness of Pappy Van Winkle, Jay Cruzen. Anyway, you guys have a wonderful evening. Back for more and Monday on Monday, the 9th of January. You be here, I'll be here, we'll be together, and we'll get through this somehow or another. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room and in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a great weekend.